Radio, New York. This is The Right Perspective with John from Staten Island and Vintage Frank from Queens. The Right Perspective from North America.
Say, not victory. The shroud of the dark side has fallen.
Let the joyous news be spread. The wicked old witch at last is dead.
A little report to the American people and to the world. The United States has conducted an operation that killed Osama bin Laden.
Today, at my direction, the United States launched a targeted operation against that compound in Abbottabad, Pakistan. A small team of Americans carried out the operation with extraordinary courage and capability.
A host of measures to cut programs that aren't working, including, by the way, in the defense area.
Can you believe this guy?
Much of the information apparently came out of Guantanamo.
Well, imagine if that would have been shut down. Gitmo, I mean.
We're going to close Guantanamo.
My Muslim faith.
It really is a good wake-up call for Mr. Obama. The world isn't what he wants it to be. It is what it is.
Guantanamo is to be closed.
Actually, some of this intelligence started 4 years ago as a result of Gitmo and some of the detainees that were there. And to think that that may have actually been shut down in the last couple of years, that was the first executive order for President Obama.
And over the last couple of years, we've heard so many people say, you got to close Gitmo. You can't interrogate people like that.
I've been very clear that Guantanamo is to be closed, that some of the practices of enhanced interrogation techniques, I think, ran counter to American values and American traditions.
And yet we're learning, according to a number of the papers, apparently one of the tips that led us to that particular house came from Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was being interviewed, I believe, at Gitmo.
Which is why we will close Guantanamo.
And the tools that President Bush put into place, Gitmo, enhanced interrogations, the vast effort to collect and collate this information, put it in a usable form, obviously served his successor quite well.
When President Obama, when he was actually campaigning to become president, he pretty much said that there maybe wasn't a war on terror, and his first executive order was to shut down Guantanamo Bay.
I want to extend best wishes to Muslims in America and around the world. Ramadan Kareem.
We'll close Guantanamo.
I would hate to think what would have happened if we had not captured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, if he had not given us information. And so I'm very gratified that those policies were put in place in 2001. It was President Bush who brought Khalid Sheikh Mohammed into the open and sent him then to Guantanamo.
As President, I will close Guantanamo.
There were seven important policy decisions made under Bush that made Sunday night possible. If he were to acknowledge that these policies put in place by his predecessor helped lead to this day, but he can't bring himself to do that.
Some of the practices of enhanced interrogation techniques, I think, ran counter to American values and American traditions.
No question of what the CIA interrogation techniques have proved very, very valuable.
Dead or alive, either way, it doesn't matter to me. Secondly, I don't know whether we're going to get him tomorrow, or a month from now, or a year from now, but we're going to get him.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people... And the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
We're going to get him, we're going to get him.
USA! 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 USA!
And this is The Right Perspective. I'm Frank of Queens, along with my good friend and co-host, John of Staten Island.
Yeah, thank you, Frank, and welcome, everyone.
And we are here tonight from 10 until 11 p.m. Eastern Northern Great Salutrian Daylight Savings Time on the Two Friends Radio Network. transmitting on 3.215 megahertz WWCR, and we broadcast from the Rod Coppola Memorial Studio in Richard D. Henderson Two Friends Network broadcast production facilities here in the Metropolitan New York area. And you could reach us at 718-761-9996, 718-761-9996, whatever is on your mind. And at 12 midnight, the World Service of the Right Perspective presents Hello, Africa, with our guest, retired colonel of the SADF, Henry Pinkham, calling in about events that are going on in South Africa, what is going on with the trial of the ANC youth leader, hate monger, bigot, racist of color, Julius Malema, police brutality and corruption. If you don't listen to Hello, Africa, you'd believe every lie and BS story that comes out from the Ministry of Lies about what is going on in South Africa. So that'll be at 12 midnight Eastern Northern Great Salutian Time on the Right Perspective, the International World Service of the Right Perspective. And the fact that, now, I'm not saying he is, and I'm not saying he isn't. Until I see the photos, I went to Missouri this year, so now I'm from Missouri. I gotta see it. I wanna see it. Don't give me a crap about offending them and inflaming them. First of all, Rod Coppola, rest in peace, was murdered by this bastard on September 11th.
That's right.
He was murdered by him, and that's why, in his honor, he was our producer, and we named the studio after him. And I want to see his body. I want to see his head with his brains hanging out. I don't want to hear, and, you know, John's wife was in the South Tower. She, thank God, made it home.
Yeah.
So the Right Perspective has a deep connection with events of 9/11. But I want to see it. I don't want to hear from this piece of crap in the White House who's taking all the credit for his pathetic megalomania that I gave the order. Oh, he's so brilliant, decisive. Now, you're a sniveling, wheezy little coward who was forced into it. Now, give me this crap. It was the Navy SEALs who carried it out. And it was George Bush's policies that led to it. And now all the rats and pigs and vermin on the left that supported him, they're in a quandary. After all, the United States, he sent U.S. forces in unilaterally, violated the sovereignty of Pakistan, committed an act of murder. He didn't get a trial. According to this, he was unarmed. First he was armed, then he was unarmed, then he was reaching for the gun. Hukum and hakum. You don't know what he was doing. The story changed continually. So they murdered an unarmed man. And by the way, aren't these the people who are against capital punishment? And they were so upset about what this country did when it went into Iraq, because then it an act of aggression. This was an act of aggression according to international law. He sent them in. He didn't consult with his allies. How would we feel if they sent the troops in from Canada and shot a citizen that was in this country? So the left really is showing their hypocrisy. They're saying they're glad he's dead. Well, wait a minute. He didn't have a trial. He should have had a trial. All comes down to the fact that this was a carefully plotted political move, had nothing to do with his wanting justice. All he concerned, he probably wanted this bastard to live into an old age. But because of all the problems he's having with the economy and the false figures given out today, with his disastrous policies that he wanted to put into play in Guantanamo, prosecuting the CIA interrogators. I mean, look at the left. The left, and all you have to do is watch a movie like The Good Shepherd, how evil and criminal the CIA is, yet it was a Navy SEAL raid led by the CIA, the same CIA that the left hates. Well, how can people, an organization, an administration that they hate, then go in and perform an act which supposedly kills an enemy of the United States, a mass murderer? How can that be? Is that possible? How could they be applauding the foreign occupier who has sent them in, who gave the okay? So the left is filled with controversial contradictions. They have all of these contradictions. It was his wife using his wife as a shield. Then it wasn't. She wasn't his wife as a shield. It was somebody else. The story kept on changing continually. He didn't want them sent in. It was really Panetta who gave the order to send them in, the head of the CIA. So you're dealing with the man who is just looking once again to make political expediency. We don't know. I'll say this. I don't know if he's dead. I want to see the picture. We are going to inflame the Mohammedan world if we show the photo of him with his eyeball, you know, like Bugsy Siegel. I mean, they always show that famous photo of the gangster Bugsy Siegel with his eye blown out. They shot him through the eye. That was a scene that was repeated in caricatured in The Godfather 1, where they shot Mo Green through the eye while he was having a massage. That's the way they got Bugsy Siegel. But they showed a photo of Bugsy Siegel. They show the photo of the gangster Carmine, probably not known outside of New York, Carmine Galante, shot in the back, shot through the face, through the eye, in the backyard of Joe and Mary's restaurant, where he's having a light lunch of salad. And the mob shot him right through the eye, and it was on the front page of the Post with his cigar hanging out of his mouth. I mean, they showed that. I mean, they showed plenty. But we can't get it. I mean, how stupid this is. Yeah, well, he thinks we're stupid. We're going to inflame people who publicly chop off heads. Chop off the head of their daughter if she dishonors them. Chop off hands. Whip people publicly. Stone people. In Afghanistan, they took queers and they toppled a brick wall on them. I mean, we're going to upset these animals? Are you out of your mind? Oh, we shouldn't be celebrating. Oh, it makes us as bad as them. No, it makes us better than them. Because we didn't, if we did, murder an innocent individual, we murdered a mass murderer. He was gotten with biblical justice, an eye for an eye. This was eye for an eye justice. This was vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. And this was our vengeance upon this beast, if they got him, which we'll know if we see the photograph. So don't tell me that Mohammedans are going to be outraged and they're going to use the photo for propaganda. I know how to use that photo for propaganda. You make up big posters of it, and you paste it on the walls of mosques in the United States and Europe. And you say, watch it. This could be, think twice before you act. This could be you. That's what you do. You let them see it every day. So they'll know that eventually that's what's going to happen to them. Now, of course, in Europe, the United States shouldn't have been celebrating. Well, of course, Europe is very frightened. But when you have a Mohammedan in the White House, of course he's not going to upset his Mohammedan brothers. But he'll throw anybody under the bus, even his fellow Mohammedan, Osama bin Laden. The photos have not been shown. DNA doesn't mean anything. You don't know where the DNA got it. I mean, how do you know? You don't know. Why? Because they tell you this is the guy's DNA? Because they tell you, what does that mean? That doesn't mean anything. Jesse James, when they killed Jesse James, what did they do? They put his body on ice to be shown, and they photographed him. They photographed John Dillinger. But him, he gets a 45-minute Mohammedan burial. Because we have to show that we respect the religion. But they said that he really wasn't, that he perverted Mohammedanism. So why should someone who perverted Mohammedanism, was responsible for the murder of 3,000 people, why should he get the respect of a funeral? Does that make sense? If anything, he should have been captured, and then we could have had a Roman triumph down Pennsylvania Avenue, having him dragged behind a U.S. Army Abrams tank. And then, like in chains, of course, like in Rome, and then, of course, like in a Roman triumph, he could have been strangled at the end. And then his head could have been chopped off, and it could have been stuck on the White House fence. And with it, a placard hanging down saying, "I am a murderer." I mean, that would have been good. That's how it should have been done. His body could have been given all sorts of indignities. That's right. There was nothing that he deserved to be shown any respect in the name of his belief. He should have been defiled. Instead, they bury him at sea, so it's just like they said about Luca Brasi in The Godfather. He sleeps with the fishes. No. He should have been publicly incinerated, publicly cremated. And, you know, it could have had the lottery, national lottery, for you to be one of the lucky ones to get a, piece of wood to throw on the fire. So we won't know until a bit of real evidence is in, and since we can't see the body now because the test, because it's gone, and since the foreign occupier, and who is he to say the photo shouldn't be been shown? Who the hell is he? Who is he? Does he own the photos? Did he take the photos? What does he mean, we can't see the photos? He doesn't want to upset them. Did these bastards over there ever think how they upset us? Did we ever do in this country, I mean, think about it. Did we ever do in this country, and that's because it's a Christian country, did we ever do in this them what they did to Christian country, in their country to Christians? I mean, think about that. We never did that. We never went around murdering them, burning their Mohammedan mosques down, killing them, raping their women, subjecting them to all sorts of horrible, primitive, savage indignities. In fact, they were protected under our law. But Christians in their countries are not protected under their law. They are persecuted and murdered under their law. So don't tell me about inflaming. And you know what? If you had a real man in the White House, if you had a real American in the White House, and if you had a real leader in the White House, he would simply say, look, you pull any crap now after showing the photos and publicly cremating his body after subjecting it to all sorts of incredible indignities and, of course, saving the head to stick on the White House fence. Well, then you say, you do it and we're going to bomb the crap out of you. We're going to bomb you off the face of the earth. That's what he would do. And that they would respect, and that they would understand. But you can't trust them. You can't trust primitive people. How do you trust the Packies? Do you know, you call them a Packie in Britain, and it's you get, what do you call it? It's illegal under their hate speech laws. Could you believe this? Call them a Packie. Ooh, you called him a Packie, you bigot. First of all, if you're smart, you will invest in Packie real estate. Packie real estate, you can make a fortune. This, imagine the salesman that sold them that piece of crap that he paid $1 million for. That thing was a hut. It was a glorified hut. Did you look at that thing? You're going to pay $1 million for that? The guy that made it in real estate over there made the greatest killing of all time.
It looks
like
a shanty town.
It is. It's a hut, a glorified hut. I'm waiting to see commercials now at night. The wacky, packy real estate millionaire. How to make millions of dollars in Pakistani real estate. Because if you can get a million for that, gee, I mean, any American three-bedroom ranch could be worth $10 million. Pakistani real estate is where is that? That's how you beat the recession. You invest in packy, sell packy real estate over there. He paid $1 million. Wow, the guy that sold him that is laughing, saying, boy, I really got this sucker. The Americans, they think they got him. I got $1 million out of this schmuck for that piece of crap. Oh. And the World Service of the Right Perspective, our Canadian correspondent, Judge Ronald, sent me this article. As you know, Canada's a joke, inside a farce, wrapped around a comedy. And that place is a comedy. I mean, they had their elections up there. Wow. Who cares?
Hey, whoopee.
Yeah, Canadian elections. Oh, boy. Canadian elections. What a joke. So he sends me this big article from the Globe and Mail, the Canada's national newspaper. It was the weekend edition. And it's about Nunavut. And that is where the northern Eskimo Beringians live. And listen how successful they are. They gave them a quarter of the country, the northern territories, a quarter of the countries, turned over to these Beringian savages. Now, you would think all of this time they're crying about the white man exploiting them, the white man doing this to them, that to them. Now you got your own country. So what does it say? The rate of violent crime per capita is 9 times what it is in the rest of Canada. If it were an independent country, none of its crime statistics would place it in the realm of South Africa and or Mexico. And only South Africa, because the whites have given up their governance of the country. It wasn't like that before. And he says in the article that it's been a total disaster. So bad, in fact, that the Globe and Mail call it a failure in Canadian nation building. A dream derailed. And the cover story on the Globe and Mail, Canada's national paper, is death at the 64th parallel. It's a disaster. So you turn over civilization, you abdicate the rule of law and civilization to the Beringians, and the Beringians do what's best. They get drunk, they murder, they rape, they rob, they kill each other, which they did for centuries.
Right,
before,
I was going to say, they reverted to type.
Yeah, before the white man came in. And speaking of white men, we got this book, and I want to get the author on. This was from a listener in Pennsylvania, Thomas Harvey. I want to thank him. He sent me two books, and one of them is a book that I was told about various times by various listeners. I really want to thank him. The book is The March of the Titans, A History of the White Race by Arthur Kemp. And it's really quite a book. I mean, I don't agree with everything in the book, but the book does have some really detailed chapters, on the Salutrians. And I think our guest that we had on 2 weeks ago, George Kadar, if you remember, much of what he said comes right out of this book. So it's really, and I'm going to see if Arthur Kemp's still around, if I could get him on the show or somebody from that publisher to come on the show and talk about the book. It's unfortunate I didn't get it during World Salutrian Month, because it would have been great to talk about. But here's a letter. I was written to the Times. And the person says, you quote a retired CIA official saying that many of his colleagues believed that harsh interrogation methods was un-American. See that? Because they know if they link that with Bush, you know that schmuck Alex Jones, I remember him a few years ago, that when I wasted my time listening to him, they're going to torture your children. That stupid schmuck. but a hustler. This sums up the opinion of many, especially on the left, who for years condemned the Bush administration's tactics in fighting the war on terrorism. But now, the same critics are plotting the raid into Pakistan to kill bin Laden. The question has to be asked, if harsh interrogation is un-American, is it American to enter a sovereign nation without permission to conduct a military raid or to shoot an unarmed enemy, which some are calling a premeditated execution? The Foreign Occupation Administration has claimed with much sanctimony that terrorists deserve civil court trial, not military tribunals. Now it seems that the FO administration decided that neither was necessary in bin Laden's case. For the record, I applaud the raid, the execution, and the waterboarding. It is hypocritical to condemn the one and defend the other based on whether it was your guy who ordered it. Mark R. Godburn, North Canaan, Connecticut. And that is so true. You see, that is their hypocrisy. They don't know what to do. How are they going to answer that? Oh, couldn't he have been brought to trial? Every time now they'll say, they'll fudge it by saying, oh, I'm glad they killed him, but nevertheless.
Right, there's always a but.
Well, screw you. When I see the paper, when I see the photos, I'll believe it. But hopefully that is what they did. Thank you.
Yeah, and thank you, Frank. It was great. And we have a soundbite from Nancy Pelosi, the hypocrite of hypocrites, to prove what Frank said. This was Nancy Pelosi when George Bush was president, and trying to capture Osama bin Laden, followed by her reaction when her God, her Fuhrer, Obama is in office.
The president said, you can run, but you can't hide Osama bin Laden. Apparently, he could. And even if he's caught tomorrow, it's 5 years too late. He's done more damage the longer he's been out there. The damage that he has done is done. And even to capture him now, I don't think makes us any safer.
Hail to the chief. Congratulations to President Obama for his leadership, for his determination, for his commitment of resources, for his making a priority the capture, the apprehension of Osama bin Laden.
Hypocrite.
That's right, hypocrite. That's the one-word response. That's all that's needed. She is one of the most partisan, vile individuals that's ever been in American politics. All of a sudden, it's vital to capture Osama bin Laden and her God. Oh, he's the hail to the chief now. But when this phony, let's start from the beginning. First of all, the only reason that Obama did this was because of his plummeting approval ratings. He had to do something to give himself a boost. And you know what? He's actually done it too early, because we have about a year and a half to go before the election. And as we saw today, the economy is not getting any better, with the unemployment rate shooting up 0.2 points, because all those people that they like or try to ignore going out and looking for jobs are now looking for jobs again. So they're showing up in the statistics. So it's actually, even though they supposedly created 240,000 jobs, 62 or 63,000 of which were those dreaded McDonald's jobs in the 1980s, those hamburger flipping jobs. Remember we said when we heard that story, oh, it's all right for people now to go out and get hamburger flipping jobs if it can help Obama's approval rating or his job numbers. But evidently it backfired because more people came out to look for jobs, so they were included in the number. And it just goes to show how many people are desperate now to get out there and find a job. But don't worry, Obama and the Democrats will demonize anyone who says that we shouldn't continue the unemployment benefits, even if it's, it becomes another welfare program. And in an economy like this, I guess in a way I can understand people, you know, needing some help, of course. But I mean, I don't know how long this is, it's going to go on. But the fact is, if we wouldn't need to even think about that if we had policies in place that would create jobs. Look how they're trying to wreck, was the aircraft Boeing, who wants to build that plant in South Carolina, and the regime is insisting that they build it in a more union-friendly state like Washington. So now we do have true fascism, which is the government trying to control the economy. You want to join us? Got a couple of open lines at 1-718-761-9996. We're coming back.
This show is a runaway beer truck careening downhill out of control. Cannot be stopped, will not be stopped.
John and Frank.
The right perspective.
Wanted. Unique organization seeks motivated young men and women for a few open positions. Team players and highly competitive individuals preferred. Successful candidates will be placed in respected positions with unlimited opportunity for advancement. If this is the opportunity you've been looking for, call 1-800-MARINES. That's right, we're the United States Marine Corps, and we're looking for a few more to join us. Travel is required.
You all know Michael Corleone, and we all remember his father. At the time of my retirement, or death, I turn over all my interest in the Havana operation to his control. But all of you will share. The Nacional will go to the Lakeville Road Boys. The Capri to the Corleone family. The Sevilla Biltmore also, but Eddie Levine of Newport will bring in the Panino brothers, Dino and Eddie, for a piece and also to handle the actual casino operations. And we've saved a piece for
John and Frank
to make sure that things go smooth back home.
Just like me, say to you, help me do, I'll be true. And what I'd like for you to say, you'll come home each day.
Paul Revere and the Raiders with Mark Lindsay out there in front.
And if you'd like to help the right perspective, stay on the air because Memorial Day is our...
Okay.
Yes, and that'll be the last time you'll hear that because Memorial Day is the cutoff day. Can't keep on doing it like this. So if you'd like to help us defer the cost and stay on, you can by making a check or money order to WWCR. Sending it to Frank and John, Box 117-9508, 4th Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11209. That's Frank and John, Box 117-9508, 4th Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11209. Help us defer the cost and stay on the air, because then Memorial Day will be our last show on shortwave. We will continue on the Internet. But that'll be it for shortwave. So if you want to help us, we sure appreciate it, and hopefully we will. John?
Yeah, all right, we're going to get to our phone calls, Richard and Paul, in a second. But just to continue this farce of Obama, and now out there, the guy who says we shouldn't spike the football, but now he's on a victory tour, taking credit for everything that he has no right to take credit for. He's discontinued the very policies, by the way, that brought Osama to justice. Now he wants to be out there and steal the credit. He's already started the campaign. And for him, you know, I spent 6 months in Fort Campbell, Kentucky, my last 6 months in the Army when I came back from Vietnam. And if I were there in uniform today, I'd tell my commanding officer, don't ask me to go to this farce and be a prop for him. Suddenly he loves the military that he's talking about cutting the budget for. The only time Democrats ever talk about cutting a budget, it's never food stamps, it's never welfare, it's not all those things that have gotten us into this tremendous debt, and with the Great Society, anywhere from $6 to $10 trillion since the mid-1960s, that are now coming back to bite us with these municipal unions also. They never talk about cutting that. No, they get their guys out there to intimidate so they can keep the benefits going, so they can keep that money coming in and really just create a slush fund for Democrat candidates. And this is the same Obama whose Justice Department just told the authorities in Texas to end a 10-year investigation of Islamic terrorists who were sending money overseas. You know why, folks? Because of with this outreach program, you know, for NASA, let's bring some of these Mohammedans into NASA, because we've got to show the world that they also had a part in technical advancement. He can't stand all those white faces he saw in the control room in front. And it's absolutely true. Very good observation. All those white faces, and I've seen them recently because they had, they always have the thing about Apollo 13 on there and landing on the moon. All those white faces in there, that really bothered Obama. O'Hama. Yeah, and he has to get those turban heads in there. And we have to get more diversity. And by the way, folks, you know those instant demonstrations that broke out in front of the White House and in Times Square and other places throughout the country? I didn't see much diversity. No. You know what I saw? White faces.
Yeah.
All those white kids. I saw a couple of Asians and like two or three black guys who are now probably thought of as Uncle Toms, shouting USA, USA, and singing the Star Spangled Banner and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance. All white faces, folks. I didn't see any Mohammedans.
No, of course.
But I saw plenty of them jumping up and down on 9/11, cheering the terrorists and
that's
the thugs.
Right. That's right.
I didn't see any out there celebrating with the rest of America, finally bringing justice to this mass murdering devil. And he brings up Osama. He wants to bring them into NASA so they, I guess, he can sabotage something else that makes America great. And, you know, speaking of Canada being lost, Frank, did you see the demonstrations in Great Britain with all the Mohammedans out there?
No.
Protesting the United States, bringing justice to Osama bin Laden. And it's amazing to me how they push the police around and they tolerate this stuff.
Yeah, well,
it's no longer their country.
Nah.
These thugs push the authorities around. Man, they better wise up. Belgium, by the way, is the next country that's banning the burqa. I don't know why. Great Britain has to wait for all of these other smaller countries to lead the way.
No, because there's a suicidal instinct that's taken over the Anglo-Saxon people. You look at England. New Zealand is gone. New Zealand is a complete ugh. So that is within them. You know, they're too busy out there paying for that welfare case and his girlfriend that he married after 8 years, paying for their wedding, paying for that old sack of potatoes there with the yellow hat that looked like a birthday cake on her head. That's a joke, that country. What a joke.
Where do they find these hats?
I know.
They look like those flying... Oh, remember like the day the Earth stood still?
Yeah.
1952, I think. And like the flying saucer with the little cup on top.
Yeah.
And that's what their hats look like. Where do they find
these
hats?
That one they were looking at was red, and it looked like they took two long balloons and tied it into a shape and put it on the side of her head. Now, they're too busy with that. So the Anglo-Saxon people, Canada, the white Protestant Canadians, not the Quebecois, but the white Protestant Canadians, the British, the New Zealanders, they're suicidal. That's why you see that, John. You can't go into the Midlands. You go into the Midlands, and they got their own Mohammedan neighborhoods with Sharia law. The cops are afraid to go in there.
Yeah.
So that's why you have that. And as far as his not, there's another thing. With him not releasing the photo, people will believe the guy is alive. Look, Stalin kept the photos of the remains of Hitler and Eva Braun, and he used that to scare the Russian people that Hitler was still alive somewhere and he's coming back and we didn't get him. And with the fact they never showed Stalin did not release the remains, the photos that they took, you had a whole cottage industry was going for what? For how many decades? You had the boys from Brazil, the classic movie. You had all of these movies where either they're going to clone Hitler, or rumors that Hitler was in Argentina. He escaped in a subway. He's in Chile. Look at Mengele. They didn't find Mengele's remains, and Mengele was around. So, you know, that's what happens when you don't show, you know, the remains of the person. You know, I mean, Mengele did escape, but look at all the rumors about him. Where Hitler, you had all of this. The guy was in Argentina, Paraguay, Brazil, Chile. He was all over. He was here. He was there. And, you know, sightings. Martin Bormann. There was a book, Game of the Foxes, by Ladislao Farago back in 75. That purported that this Argentine businessman was really Martin Bormann who escaped. So you got to show. Then they claimed that Bormann was killed and they found his remains not far from the bunker as he tried to escape. So, you know, if you show it, you kill it, the rumor. But now the rumor will be that this guy, look, you know the Tsar? They were reporting that the Tsar, who they did, you know, the Bolsheviks, after they murdered his family, there were rumors the guy was seen in London and this and that. I mean, I could have seen that, believe that, because he was so close to George, you know, his cousins. They looked so similar. You saw the photos,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they looked exactly alike.
Yeah, so they could have thought, you know, that George was Nicholas. But the point is, that's why you show it, but not this bastard. Want to go to Paul or to Richard?
Yeah.
Let's go to West Virginia, say hello to Richard. Welcome to the Right Perspective, Richard.
Hey, boys.
Thanks for waiting, Richard.
Thanks for waiting.
Oh, man, I ain't got anything else to do, and I've been sitting here listening to you and laughing my butt off. talking about not bringing Osama back, every soldier that's been in Afghanistan and Iraq has been brought back on ICE.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why can't they bring him back? Yep. Why didn't they bring him back? Now all these conspiracy theories is going to sound just right.
Yeah. And you know what? Like Ronald Reagan told that obnoxious person that was controlling a debate that they had back in 1967 or something, and he tried to shut Reagan's microphone off, and Ronald Reagan said, "I'm paying for this microphone." Well, you know what? The American people paid to have Osama bin Laden killed. They've been financing the war on terror, and they have a right. They were waiting for 10 years to get him. And to see this guy blown up. And we deserve. We paid for this. And
yes.
Who is Obama to just say, no, I'll make all the decisions. He's not king. This should have been, the American people should have been able to see the fruits of all the money that they've been laying out for the last 10 years.
Yep. Definitely. Don, you said you was in Vietnam.
Yes.
I don't know if you saw this or not, but I was in during Vietnam, too,
mm-hmm.
And I've heard stories from SEALs that was in Vietnam that, you know, the Kong, if they weren't, if they lost a piece of their body or whatever, they wouldn't go to the other place. And the SEALs would take the Kong and take a pointed stick, put it up their anus, and then set them down. It'd go through the body or cut the bodies in pieces.
Like Vlad.
So they couldn't go on.
Yeah. Vlad Dracula.
Putting him to swim with the lobsters don't exactly, that don't make any sense.
No, he's swimming
and
with the fishes.
I think, just like you do, I don't think that, I'm beginning to believe they didn't have him.
That's quite possible.
I feel it's just as much a farce as,
I think they should have brought him back, dragged him up and down Broadway behind one of those damaged fire trucks on 9/11,
uh-huh.
And then buried him underneath one of those towers that are going up down.
Yeah, and when they bury him, throw in a pig.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, that's what they did during the Huk Rebellion in the Philippines.
Yeah.
They captured these Mohammedan bastards, and they'd bury him in a pigskin so they couldn't go to Allah land. And that's what they should have done to him, and put him on a revolving carousel so they could all see him.
Yeah, I agree with that. And another thing, they giving him a Muslim funeral. I think that all this, like you said, Obama did this too soon.
Yep.
And I just hope he's going to pay for it. His birth certificate is being found out. This is going to be found out. Yeah. And I would not want to be in his shoes.
Yeah. Yeah, well, this incompetent regime we have in Washington is already finding a way to mess up a good thing. Because they're all over the place with it. A lot of people are challenging every step that they took. And who knows? We won't know the whole story for a long time, but the regime certainly isn't handling it well. He should have just stayed in Washington and sent congratulations or maybe had some... well, you can't invite those SEALs to the White House because they're probably targeted already.
Oh, yeah, they
so,
would be.
You know, definitely. You can't bring them out into the open.
Yeah, there's a lot of things that I was involved with that I'm glad I wasn't brought out.
Well,
the
Bill Clinton could teach them how to throw a blanket over them and hide them, you know, in the back of limousines to bring them into the White House.
Yeah, I could do that.
All right, we're going to move along.
Or put them in, put them behind a screen and change your voice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could do that.
No, you know, it's something else, though. With all this, I saw one of the pictures that was taken with the three guys laying there, you know, looked like a water pistol behind one's head.
Yeah.
If you looked at the walls, I didn't see a bullhole.
That's right.
And did you see that picture of Obama in the Situation Room sitting there on the side looking like a whipped puppy?
Yeah, did he look insignificant or what?
Yeah.
I mean, Hillary Clinton looked bigger than him.
Well, from what I understand, he went, you know, he was playing golf. He left them because he was going to play golf. He wasn't going to worry about what he was planning on doing, so he was scrubbing the mission. He come back, and from what I can understand, he told them he was going to scrub the mission. Hmm. And they told him, hey, man, it's already on its way. You know, boots are almost on the ground.
Oh, man. He was probably shaking in his boots. If this is a fail, to be another Jimmy Carter. But, you know,
Carter, at least, you know, he can't be called the worst president now.
Yeah.
Because Obama done took over.
Well, they're bookends, that's for sure. All right, Richard, we're going to move on.
Thank you, buddy.
I want to say thanks for calling.
Thank
you,
Richard.
I'll be good now.
All right,
bye-bye.
Call again.
And what they could have done also was taking him up to the Empire State Building, put him on a carpet, and said, let's see if it flies, scumbag. Let's say hello to Paul in Sarasota, Florida. Welcome to the Right Perspective.
Hey, Paul.
Hey, Frank. Hey, John. That'd be a great moment in aviation history, wouldn't
right.
it?
Play Steppenwolf's songs, Magic Carpet.
He could get John Kay out there with the dark glasses. The little thing he used to crank to make the whining noise during the song. What was
the
machine or something? That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah. As he goes flying down the pavement.
Yeah.
And I've seen, I worked in the Empire State Building. I remember somebody jumped off, and this guy hit the top of a car. And, like, his body literally exploded from the impact. So that, like, would have been great if they would have put him on a carpet and seen if it fly when he hit the concrete. Mm-hmm. Could have had a little of him here. You know, people could have gone around picking up parts of him like souvenirs. And then sold it on eBay.
You know, don't you think if they had done that, they could have, if they'd cut the government in even maybe 20% of the eBay proceeds, they could have paid out the national debt. I mean, this is the word going around with all this stuff.
That's right.
You know, it just goes against, never mind cognizant thought. This cuts through levels. This cuts through conscious thought right down to human instinct. It's as if the socialists are, this is another way they're pushing to make this idiotic, schizophrenic fantasy of Marxist called the new socialist man, where you do everything against human judgment and reason. Now we're going against instinct. Just as they advocated, some of them, that when a little infant survives the demonic procedure known as abortion, well, you just leave it on a shelf and let it die. But human instinct is that you run. You see a life, a furry life, a human life in distress. You run to save it. It's the guy on the bridge up in Tampa 20 years ago when it was hit by the barge and the bridge collapsed and people were driving off. This guy stopped short. He got out of the car. He goes running back down the highway, warning people, waving his arms frantically, stop, stop. He didn't even know what he, you know, the typical instinct takes over. Literally, it takes over and compels you to save a life. And it, this also is another instinctual thing that's being contravened, isn't it? Because you have an animal. You have a cat. The cat goes out and he bags a squirrel. Or he bags a mouse. What's he do? Well, you open your back door one morning, and there's the tail of the squirrel. Or usually, some of them will love to set up the mouse heads on the back step to show you what they've done. This is instinctive. If a hunter goes out and hunts a deer, he brings it back. He's going to eat it. The game wardens might want to inspect it. This is instinctive as well as cognitive. This is the most wanted mass murderer in recent memory. Oh, we gave him a burial at sea. Well, you know, guys, I looked at the map. If I read it right, where this guy was living, what was it, 200 miles northwest of Lahore, up in the middle of nowhere.
Hold it right there, Paul. We're going to have to put you on hold for a minute. We're getting a call from Canada, and we'll go right back to you, all right?
Thank you. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Let's go to Scott in... Yeah, okay. Let's go to Scott. Disconnected him.
Now we disconnected both. Scott, you there?
You there, Scott?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, I am.
Okay, go ahead.
Oh, we
accidentally disconnected Bob, so if he'll call back.
Yeah, call back, Bob.
Yes, Scott.
Yes, hi, how are you?
All right.
That's good. Just wanted to kind of apologize. I haven't called in to you guys in probably over a year now.
Yes, I wondered what happened to you there.
That's two demerits.
Oh, no. Nothing happened. It's just my shortwave is really fuzzy, and I haven't been able to pick you up. So I've just been listening to you on the repeat on the podcast all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to call in, and I wanted to call in, but I never know what you're talking about until a day or two later.
Oh.
So I just thought that I would mention two things that was on my mind.
Yes.
First of all, I don't understand. One thing I don't understand about this Bin Laden encounter,
yes,
was when the president came on and he gave his little spiel and he said that, well, we buried him at sea within 24 hours of the killing in accordance with Muslim law and tradition.
Yes.
And I thought, well, since when did you care about Muslim law and tradition? This guy is, I mean, aren't you at war? But this guy, I mean, what does it matter, Muslim tradition?
Well, I don't think he thinks we are at war with them. I think these are his friends.
Well, maybe they are, but doesn't that strike you as odd?
Yes.
That they get the guy and they're like, oh, no pictures, and we got rid of the body in 24 hours. I'm like, why? What's going on there? That to me just seemed a little... Mm. That seems suspicious. So.
Yeah, that's what the mafia does. Do you know that? They get rid of the body and no photos.
And they ditch it in the water.
Yeah, so like Luca Brasi. He sleeps with the fishes.
Yeah, that's a good point. But I was just wondering what you guys thought of that. That struck me as odd.
Yeah.
That the body vanishes. Now, this is going to give rise to all kinds of crazy things now people will be talking about, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was odd myself.
Yeah, well...
Yes, go ahead.
What was that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, and here's number two. I couldn't really catch what you were saying about the election in Canada because the shortwave was fuzzy.
Well, nobody cares.
What?
Nobody cares.
About the election, not about you.
No, not about you. No, nobody cares about the election.
Yeah. Well, no, but here's the only thing I'm glad about, though, is... this Conservative Party, which isn't really all that conservative, but they are made up of former Reform Party guys, they pulled a big majority election. And this man who's the Prime Minister now, back in September, tried to roll back and get rid of the gun control laws that were on the books at the time. And he couldn't do it because he didn't have a majority government. So the other guys, the socialists, the liberals, voted him down.
Mm-hmm.
Now he has far and away a big majority government, and I'm hoping that he makes good on his word and goes in and strikes those down, because now he can do it, and nobody can stand in his way, supposedly.
Well, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes. This is what I'm hoping. This is the last hope that I have for the country right now.
Yeah, because...
And if he doesn't do it, then I got to pack up and leave. I got to get out of this.
Where are you going to go?
Yeah, where am I going to go?
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I go to Texas where you can own any kind of gun you want. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That's great. Yeah. You know, you can get a permit, the concealed to carry permit. You could do that down in Florida. A lot of great places. Unfortunately, here in New York, you can't get a gun for squat unless, of course, you're a so-called celebrity. Or like that fat slob dyke, bull dyke, Rosie O'Donnell. She carries a gun. All the liberals carry guns. I want to ask you, we read an article about Nunavut. And the rate of violent crime there per capita is 9 times what it is in the rest of Canada. How do the Canadians feel that you gave up a quarter of your country to these Beringians and they revert to their naturalistic, savage, and barbaric state? Why did they give up the country?
I'd have to say most people don't really care because they're so apathetic.
Really?
I got to ask you one thing, though.
Yes.
You said Rosie O'Donnell carries a gun?
Hey, yeah. Her bodyguard, I think, has one.
Oh.
Yeah, it's okay for them.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a really fast story?
Yes.
About that?
Yes.
Rosie O'Donnell was here in Halifax 5-6 years ago, maybe. I don't remember.
You have our sympathies.
Believe me, I did. She went to the Halifax Citadel, which is a museum that's built around a big fort.
Yes, I was there.
And the people who work there dress up in costumes with red coats and big poofy hats and carry around muskets and act like they did in the 1800s, right? It's part of the gimmick.
Right.
When she came to town, it was known that she despised and loathed firearms and guns. And those people who worked on Citadel Hill were told to encase put their muskets away for the day.
Are you kidding?
Wow.
She was there.
Are you kidding?
And they did that for her alone. I knew the people because I worked and I volunteered there, and I went up the day after and I said, so what did you guys do? Your job is to stand around and look like soldiers, to pose as a soldier. That's your job. What did you do all day when she was here? The guys shrugged their shoulders and said, we didn't do anything. We just wandered around like having the day off.
Oh.
I was like, I can't believe it. We're not talking about guys walking around with rocket launchers and machine guns. We're talking about muskets from 1850. And they encased them because she went up there and they knew she didn't like guns. So they had all these guys encased them. That's a true story.
It's amazing how the minority runs everything today.
Yeah, but who the hell is she?
I know.
She's a fat bull dyke.
Yeah, I know. I mean, then she said... Well, George Bush was the president at the time, and she had the nerve. She came up here, and she said, I think George Bush America could learn a lot from Canada, referring to the gay marriage stuff.
Oh, please.
And I was like, I wish I had been there, like, because I volunteered at that Citadel when she was there at that time, and I wasn't there that day. And I would like to have been there, because I probably would have been arrested for the stuff I would have said to her, but... Anyway, that's a true story. I just thought I'd tell you that because you mentioned
she... Remember she tried to get them to change the name of the Broadway play, Annie Get Your Gun? She didn't like the fact that the title had gun in it.
Good Lord.
I know.
That's insane.
It is.
I know.
All right, Scott, good hearing from you. Call again.
Oh, I'll call again. But anyway, guys, I love listening to your show. I wish you guys were on like every night.
So do I.
It's really a wonderful show.
Send us some help so we can stay on one night a week. Bye-bye.
Okay. Take care.
All right. All right. That went fast when you're having fun. We'll end the show with a quote, this portion of the show anyway, with a quote from the great Aristotle, who said... Men acquire a particular quality by constantly acting in a particular way.
If talk radio lasts 1,000 years, the right perspective will have been its finest hour. Thank you!
opinion, passion. Now, here they are.
John from Staten Island and Frank from Queens.
The great Harry James and Sleepy Time Girl. That's the name of that tune. That's going way back. I like big band music here on The Right Perspective. And, we've got a couple of open lines, folks, for anything that's on your mind. 1-718-761-9996. Sorry we had to put Paul on hold there. I guess we'll go back to him and let him finish up. There you go, Paul.
Thanks for waiting, Paul.
Yeah.
Sure. Now, that was interesting about Rosie. When Scott mentioned Halifax, I was thinking all those great Jesse simple stories featuring Tom Selleck are filmed up supposedly in Halifax, Nova Scotia, and Tom Selleck, of course, is one of many increasing numbers of Hollywood actors who are conservative.
Yeah.
He's a shooter. And that shows clearly in the program. He knows what he's doing with to handle a firearm. He's not just acting. And, down here in Florida, like Texas, they passed the laws, and 20-something years ago in Florida with a concealed carry, there's about 34 states that have reciprocal agreements with Florida for the concealed carry, and the crime has done nothing but decrease since. In fact, Florida just passed another package of laws under our great governor, Rick Scott, to, again, relax the firearms laws because these pediatricians, our attorney general's wife is a pediatrician, and the pediatricians have been running this little, sort of like a little socialist rat fink program where they browbeat parents. They start asking intrusive questions. One of the questions, do you own guns? How many guns? Why do you own guns? Shouldn't you get rid of them? And in one case here, it was an Orlando pediatrician sued a couple that refused to answer his questions. Finally, the NRA and a lot of other, concerned individuals and a few other gun organizations passed a law this year to put a stop to that. Pointing out that the pediatrician's job is to give medical treatment to infants, not act as social workers. This is how insidious these people are. I'm not surprised to hear that gluttonous ingrate Rosie O'Connell or Blosie O'Connell has an armed bodyguard. 30 years ago, when I knew nothing, started from the standpoint of, being somewhat proficient with a rifle, but not really knowing a whole lot about pistols and handgun shooting and all that, and just wanted to research the issue. And 30 years ago, of course, gun control was the raging debate, and it was the same thing. You want to find out who's who has the bodyguards, who has all the carry permits? Oh, it's usually the same rich celebrities that are going around telling us we shouldn't own guns, just like Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Isn't he trying to shake down New Yorkers up there now to increase the amount of his bodyguards and better arm them as he has that carnival going around the country telling us we shouldn't own guns? I mean, do these people realize how we see them? Do they get that, you think?
I think they only see what they want to see. Don't forget, these are very arrogant people, self-righteous people. And they don't even listen to a difference of opinion. So they have tunnel vision. It's what they want and what they think is right, and that's it. That's why logic and common sense mean nothing to these people.
It's a dictatorial. That's a hair's breadth removed from any other dictatorship. Then, and they always drift left, and they always go commie. Nothing has changed for these people. The horns that blast the loudest for gun control are usually celebrities and politicians, all of whom. Mayor Daley, case in point, this guy doesn't go anywhere without a phalanx of heavily armed bodyguards. And why, I don't know. I don't think, I mean, the American people, by and large, are law-abiding and orderly. I don't think there's really that many people that would like to do them harm, if any. These people really are a case study, aren't they?
Well, you see, it has nothing to do with the people being law-abiding or anything like that, Paul. What it has to do is they don't want the people to be able to take up arms against them when they take over. And when they stifle every one of your freedoms, they don't want to be able to be overthrown. What happens in it, these people have a dictatorial mentality. The next thing that's coming, Frank, our worst fears, and Paul, we've brought this up every now and then. Well, I just heard it again over the weekend that Obama is putting together some legislation that will prevent you from driving but so far without being taxed. When you pull into a gas station, if you've gone over the limit, you'll have to pay a tax if you drive too far in your car. They want to put a device in your car that tracks your mileage. And they talked about George Bush slowly but surely taking away your freedoms and your personal rights. This guy is dangerous. The whole regime is dangerous. Now, you talk about the redcoats. Well, we've got another potential. This guy's going to cause a violent revolution in this country. And that's why they don't want you to have guns. They don't want you to be able to rise up.
Oh, no. No, criminals don't like, they don't like a challenge. That's why they're criminals. They like the path of least resistance. They like to have some of their victims hogtied first so they can just have their way with them without risking their ever precious little skin in the game that they like to go on about. You know, this idea of taxing mileage, doesn't this show not only the left is just fixated, as you said so often and so well, the left is hate, and they hate with us from the moment they open their stupid campaign. They are filled with hate. They hate the car. Why? Well, because the car gives us the freedom to go where we want, when we want, with whom we want. We can get in our car and drive without having to have our genitalia groped by some big fat slob in a rented uniform or some bull dyke who's picking our pocket at the same time, like at the airport. And they just hate that. They want everybody on the choo-choo train or some other inane form of mass transit that really these systems without state subsidies, hey, they failed 100 years ago. Like everything else, the left wants, like their Islamic buddies, the left wants to go back 100, then 1,000, and 2,000 years. And they can't even be original. During the last gas crisis, which was largely caused by government meddling during the Carter Glory era. Well, remember that? The same thing. They wanted to tax horsepower.
Yeah.
You had a big engine. Ooh, the horsepower. If you had a gas guzzler. You know, they're so retarded.
Yeah.
So many people have pointed out on this American Thinker website, several posters, this article is up today about the, you know, tax, put the snitch device in everybody's car. First of all, this is like having a Communist Party political officer riding shotgun with you, isn't it?
Yep. Well, look, when those reports came out this week that everyone who's in the car market are buying smaller cars now for better gas mileage, this is what the left wants. This is their dream come true.
Oh, remember during the Carter years, they kept, because they're such nasty, spoiled, rotten little problem children. Remember they kept going on during the gas lines about Americans have to give up their pointless driving. Gasoline to be $10 a gallon. Well, that would make it today about $30 a gallon, wouldn't it? So, yeah, this is like their big fat wet dream. Nobody can afford gas, so everybody can go live in a northern tier urban slum run by the ilk of Mayor Daley of Bloomberg. Well, I'm sorry, the American people have other plans. The problem is not a shortage of gas. We know why the price is high. The regime did it. Nobody's fooled by that. And they're going to tax gas. People have been pointing out all over the place, we already have a program in place that taxes you depending upon how many miles you drive. It's called the federal excise tax on gas. The people have pointed out these people are so stupid. They're so eager to get rid of the car. The thing they hate the most here, or one of the many things they hate in the car, they know nothing about. Since who knows when, since driving began, gasoline has a federal excise tax on it. Every time you pull up to the pump, you don't need some snitch box in your car ratting out your position and your speed to these little queer bait ivory tower jerks. The more miles you drive, the more gas you buy, the more federal tax you pay. It's done right at the pump. These people don't even, they're not right. I mean, in many ways, they're cunning and they're treacherous, but they're beyond stupid. People are not fooled by this. I have yet to speak to anyone who said right away, this isn't about taxing mileage. This is about control. With the devices they have today, with GPS systems, they want to track your speed. You know, in the early 2000s, they had these mean oddballs over in the UK, the ivory tower types. They live on campus. They teach on campus. They leave their homes on campus and go down to the pub, and they slither around with some of their students in the pubs, in the men's toilet, and then they slither back home to their wife. So a gas tax wouldn't cost them a thing because they live on the campus. And they came up with this idea if no later than the early 2000s that every car should have a tracking device tabulating the mileage, the position, the speed. They came up with this idea, anytime you exceed the speed limit, which should be set at 30 miles per hour, they said, and for each time you exceed it, your movements would be tracked and reported automatically, and you'd get a ticket in the mail because there's these little red coat King George comfort boys were saying, nobody has the right to flout the law. Well, they can take their law and stick it. This is America. They want to pull that crap, let them pull it in their own country. But you remember Bloomberg in the early 2000s was a big fan of, London has the driving tax within the city? And Bloomberg was all for that, remember?
Yeah,
This is the same kind of crap. And it's just they hate individual movement.
Yes, individual freedom, they hate it.
They just hate it. If one of them would just step forward.
They hate it for you, not for themselves.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, oh, no, they have their limousines. I mean, they need their 25-car motorcades, of course. These are very, very important people. And, you know, the more cars they have around them, then nobody can see what they're doing with the 14 and 12-year-olds in the back seat when they're stuffing caviar down their pie hole and going on gassing off at us about global warming. I mean, any of us who lived in the 60s in and around New York, Boston, the Northeast, where the Ivy League axis of weevils is, we know these people. They blew their brains out on acid. They were inhaling Marx and marijuana fumes day in and day out, and they were jumping in and out of bed with these broads who had never washed, never shaved their armpits, braided them with the old joke. 40-something years later, they've learned nothing, and then now here they are telling us the business. And I guess they think they still fool us. My only question is, why? Why do they still think they fool us?
Because they're arrogant. They think they're so intellectually superior to you that there's no way that you'll be able to see that they're trying to put it over on you. But we are seeing it more and more.
Yeah. I mean, this thing with the picture of Bin Laden, I forget which one it was. I remember there was somewhere around 1980, it was a big Paulie Castellano that got blasted. Was it outside Sparks' steakhouse? I remember seeing that picture in the New York papers. Somewhere around, there was always some mobster lying in the street with an eye shot out of his head or in a pool of blood. I remember one who slumped forward in a bowl of food. That was humorous.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, there was a photo of the anonymous poor soul. He was a trucker about 32 years ago during Jimmy Carter's self-created, gratuitous, nasty little gas crisis. This poor trucker came in to get some gas, and there was some kind of a serious fight in the gas line, for those of us who remember them, thanks to the left.
Yeah, yeah.
And this poor trucker was killed, and here he is, blood dripping out of him all over his truck, the dashboard, the car, the truck is saturated with blood. Oh, but we can't show Bin Laden. It'll inflame the sensibilities of these scumbag head cutters. These people are born upset. They're psychopaths. These people are filled with
I know.
We don't
That's why I have to laugh, Paul, when I hear them say, well, we might incite them. I mean, you need something to incite these people?
The wind blows, John, and they're incited.
I know.
If you say something, they're incited. If you don't say anything, they're twice as incited.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the most ludicrous thing I've heard.
They're not happy unless they're incited.
See, they think the left, they're trying to convince people this is a two-part process. We said or did something which incited them. No, they are responsible for themselves. They incited themselves. This is the sly, actually. It's very much like last week when that phony O'Reilly, what was it, with regard to the story about the girl from in America, a young lady who posed for Playboy. I guess she comes from an Islamist family. Now, whether or not we agree with posing in Playboy or whatever, she's free to do it. This is America. That's her business, nobody else's. But the Muslim community, of course, was outraged and was crafting her doom as punishment, of course. And it was reported that O'Reilly, on his show, who discussed this story, said, well, maybe, you know, she made a mistake in provoking the community. Words to that effect. No, it's not a two-part process. She exercised a right. Whether we agree with her or not is irrelevant. The Muslim community, independent of her exercise of that right, did what it always does. It planned her death, because by and large, these people are gutless, coward, sneak assassins. They have a millennia-long history of this. You see what I'm saying? This is how creeping Sharia thinking comes in, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's the way they operate.
It's like when somebody has a fine possession and it is stolen, say by an acquaintance or by a co-worker, and the apologists will come forward and say, well, you know, that really was a nice bauble that you had. You can understand why they'd take it. No, I can't.
Yeah.
No, that's not the point. Many people have many fine things, but you and I, we don't go stealing these things.
Yeah.
If these people want to cut off heads, that's their problem. That's their choice, not ours. There's no photograph that's going to provoke them.
No, it's...
This is like creeping Sharia thinking. It's somehow... We're accepting the blame for the Muslims, for the jihadist psychopathology. Just because they want to cut off heads, that has nothing to do with our production of a photo or lack thereof, does it?
No way. Look, first of all, what's this nonsense that we might incite somebody? When we shot down Yamamoto in World War II, were we worried about whether we were going to make the Japanese even more angry at us? It's so stupid.
I think the old Irish cops years ago had a good line. What they used to say after giving somebody the what for behind the police station was, and next time there'll be a little bit more of that for you, boy, or if you get out of line. I mean, that's just the way it is. The right answer would be, oh, you don't like this photo? Well, you're next.
Yeah.
That's all. I mean, it's very simple. Nobody worried about inciting the sensibilities of the community.
Yeah.
When Saddam Hussein was hung, when his sons were shot and killed and their photos were displayed,
I guess we shouldn't have struck back after Pearl Harbor, because we might incite the Japanese.
Well, yeah, I mean, this is creeping, whether it's communism or just on a small scale, a crime syndicate, this is apologizing for the deviant, demonic, psychopathic behavior of the thug. I don't care if they're incited. These people are always incited. anyone who's ever been in the Middle East has seen a film about it. You walk through the souk, they're jumping out trying to sell you this and that. You make them an offer, it's never good. Oh, a pint of camel dung, I'll give you $5,000. And they start screaming, you walk away, they scream louder. They're always provoked. Who the heck cares? I don't. And so what? The right answer is, you can get as provoked as you want.
Yeah, they can make us angry, but we're not allowed to make them angry.
And again, it is not a cause and effect relationship. They're angry because they're always angry, because they're full of hate.
Yeah.
Anyone who's had an alcoholic, the old cliche, an alcoholic family member or a tyrannical uncle or a socio boss at work, they're always up to something. They're always on everybody's case, usually, put everybody off balance so nobody takes a good, hard, cold look at them. These people are always provoked. So what? The picture provokes them? Well, great. We'll show you a whole photo album. Here, watch. Look at the photos of you next week. Imagine how provoked you're going to be. I mean, this is the right answer. Who cares? I can't picture President Reagan speaking like this. But then again, we didn't have a whole lot of these troubles during his watch either.
Yeah, well, he wasn't worried about provoking the Mohammedans when he bombed the crap out of Daffy.
No, or when he called them, what was it, the Libyan loony or the madman of the Middle East?
Mad dog, the mad dog of the Middle East.
I didn't hear him, you know, nobody said, that would offend their side. Who the heck cares?
Yeah.
They're always offended. Everything.
I want to offend them.
Well, bottom line, these people have served notice many, many centuries ago that they are waging war against the world.
Well, they let us know. They let us know five times in the 1990s, and we had another cowardly Democrat president who didn't do anything about that one either.
Remember that? Yeah. Oh, yeah, Bill. And it's funny, they were trying to blame Rumsfeld this week, saying, "Well, Rumsfeld had a chance to get Bin Laden." And, yeah, no, actually, let's talk about Bubba Bullshale during the 90s, who was contacted by the leader of one of the African countries who told him point blank, we have Bin Laden here in our country, in our sights. You want him, you got him. If you don't want to get him, we'll get him. Oh, no, Bubba didn't want that. Oh, no, I wonder why.
Well, he never wanted to do anything. He never wanted to do anything controversial that might end up hurting his approval ratings. They asked him a number. They interrupted his golf game to tell him we had him in his sights, and he said he wouldn't give the okay.
No, he refused. Absolutely refused. And forbade anyone else from going after this maggot. And we have read the more factual accounts we read, the more factual novels even that you read that are based around so many of the terror incidents of the 90s. There's a clearly discernible rising pattern of severity and increasing number of these, every one of which results from Clinton's refusal to do a bloody thing about it, except, you know, bang his little red gong and beat his stooge Bible on top of his little red desk and say, "Oh, well, it's those right-wing gun-owning militias. Oh, yeah, oh, sure." Well, I don't think anybody's having much of that anymore.
All right. Thank you, Paul. Good
talk. Thank you, gentlemen. Thanks for all that you do.
Thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
All right. Take care.
Let's go to James in New Jersey. Welcome to Right Perspective.
Hi, guys.
Hi.
Frank, I heard your opening monologue.
Yes.
You want to see the photo?
Yes. Yep.
You're going to see it.
Yeah.
October 2012.
It's very astute.
Huh?
It's very astute.
After a groundswell led by Trump, I suppose. I told John last week, I promote your show all the time. I'm always telling people.
Oh, thank you.
And I walk around listening to the archives. I have archives going back several years.
Oh, wow.
And there's this one guy who, you know, I keep telling him, you got to listen. He's a Mark Levin fan.
Right.
All right? And I keep telling him, you got to listen to Right Perspective. You got to listen. Well, I came across an archive with an interview you guys did with M. Stanton Evans.
Oh, yeah.
What a fantastic interview that was.
Thank you.
Especially considering the fact that you hadn't even read the book.
Thanks.
You know, you just knew the subject so well, you know, that you were able to do a tremendous job. In fact, he complimented you during the interview.
Oh, really?
On your knowledge. Thanks. So I told this guy, I asked this guy, I said, geez, have you ever heard of the, you know, this book by M. Stanton Evans? Well, you know, that's one of his favorite books.
Brilliant.
And when he found out, you know, about the interview and that, make a long story short, today I went in the chat room, I see this guy's post. What do you think he calls Obama?
The foreign occupier?
Little Mugabe.
Oh, that's right.
Now, a couple things. You know, Frank, I sent you a bunch of emails.
Yes, yes.
Okay, because normally you respond to them.
Right,
I didn't get a chance. The stuff concerning Milosevic. And you probably heard the story, but, you know, Susan Rice at the UN told reporters that Gaddafi was issuing Viagra.
Yes.
To his troops. You know, this is just another part of the propaganda war. I'm not saying Gaddafi's a good guy. I'm saying that, as I said the last time I called, this is like, it's like the same thing all over again. Same song, the same dance. Your previous caller, ahead?
Yes.
Now, your previous caller said, why do they think they fool us? Well, they do fool us. And they fool us doing the same thing over and over and over. And it's disgusting. It really makes me sad. I don't believe any of this stuff with Bin Laden. And a photo won't help either.
No. No.
Now, Frank, I know you're a reader.
Yes.
Have you ever read a book on Hitler called Hitler and the Power of Aesthetics?
No.
Frederick Spott.
No, but I heard of it.
It's an excellent book. And it takes a... you know, how can I say this? It views Hitler as the person, as a guy consumed with culture.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wonderful photo in the book. You know, when Hitler visited Italy, he insisted on going to all the museums. And Mussolini, you know, had to accompany him. And I don't think Mussolini was much for the arts.
No.
That may be literature. And there's a wonderful photo in the book of this, of Hitler, like, gazing in total rapture at this statue. And next to him is this scowling Mussolini, like obviously bored out of his mind. The book is worth it just for that picture, for you.
Does that book talk about Hitler as the first postmodern politician?
No.
Oh.
No, not that I think. I don't think so. Basically, what it says is that Hitler was an artist.
Right.
And you know, and his canvas was Germany. And, you know, for him, the wars he waged, they were wars for culture. You know?
Yeah, in what way?
Well, he sought to, you know, he believed, you know, that the West was decadent. The Soviets, of course, were destroyers of culture. And he believed in like a, Greco-Roman cultural tradition. That's what he saw himself as fighting for. And what he couldn't understand was why the art that was produced in his own regime was so horrible. And he knew it was horrible. But he didn't grasp that art doesn't flourish in a dictatorship.
Right.
So,
and art at that time was moving in different directions than... hold it right there. We'll get right back to you. reach us at 718-761-9996 at 12 midnight. Hello, Africa, with Colonel Henry Pinkham, live from Pretoria.
John is on Staten Island. Is this the John?
I don't think this is the John. I'm sorry about that.
I'm very disappointed.
That's okay. Go ahead.
Saturday, 1400 hours, Army Reserve exercise. Your unit must locate a new water supply for a small town. Water from a lake is treated and made safe to drink. On Saturday, you learn to handle pressure in the Army Reserve. So on Monday, it's easy back at college to handle a certain biology professor.
Your answer, please, Miss Perez. The class is waiting.
Plasma, sir.
Excellent.
Serve as little as 1 weekend a month, 2 weeks a year. Earn money for college. Visit the Army Reserve at GoArmyReserve.com. Paid for by the U.S. Army Reserve.
I thought you said she was dead. That was her sister, the Wicked Witch of the East. This is the Wicked Witch of the West. She's worse than the other one was.
Who killed my sister? Who killed the Witch of the East? Was it you?
No. No, it was...
Dark and Bright!
I didn't mean to kill anybody.
Big band break bump ins tonight. The greatest music ever made. Never get tired of that.
Yeah.
We're speaking to James.
Yes.
Let's go back to James in Hackensack,
yes,
New
James.
Jersey.
Yes.
Okay.
James.
And John, your previous caller, and you, you know, made the point about Clinton refusing Bin Laden.
Yes.
Well, you know, I don't know if you've read any of the accounts of the Bush administration. Negotiations with the Taliban to take Bin Laden before 9/11. Are you aware of this?
Yeah, I think the Saudis just didn't want to give him up.
No. This is when he was in Afghanistan.
Yeah, we were working with them then to defeat the Soviets.
No. This is in 2001.
Yeah.
When Bush was president.
Yeah.
The Taliban, there was a faction of the Taliban that did not want Bin Laden in their country because there were sanctions against them, largely because of the activities of Bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. And they were seeking a way to get rid of him. And they were in negotiations with the U.S. government, with the Bush administration. And those negotiations came to nothing. But it wasn't because of the lack of effort from the Taliban.
Did they say why? Why the negotiations didn't go anywhere?
No. The White House apparently had hired a guy who was a go-between. You can find this on a website, I think it's called Counterpunch, who interviewed the guy. But there are other reports of this as well. And the guy would meet with them every couple of months. The Taliban, they were either going to release him to another country or they were going to turn him over to the United States. But it was a delicate kind of thing because Bin Laden had supporters in the Taliban regime as well, particularly Mullah Omar.
Yeah. Well, was this before 9/11?
Yes.
Yeah, well, maybe we didn't think that he was that much of... This was before he had sent people over to fly planes into... The World Trade Center.
Been charged with the bombing of the USS Cole, though.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, if you're going to blame Clinton, okay, fine. But I don't think Bush's record on this is too good, and it hasn't really been examined.
Oh,
now, there was something else I wanted to say. All right. Well, anyway. I'll just go, but before I do, I wondered if you heard the story about Ahmadinejad.
No, that they're thinking of deposing him?
Yeah, but do you know why?
What, the mullahs?
Yeah.
What yeah, is it?
That he's yeah. using magic or something?
Yeah. He's been accused of invoking magicians and spirits.
Oh.
Oh, man. You know what's frightening about that, James? That these are people that have... technologically, they can develop nuclear weapons, but culturally, they're medieval. I mean, think how scary that is.
Well, remember the Ministry of Lies.
Yeah, well, the Ministry of Lies is very good at manipulation. They can turn anything any way they want, and then years later, when it's too late, the damage has been done or they've reached their goals, they can turn around and claim that. I remember the demonization of Milosevic. I remember all of this, all of the stories that came out, and it had nothing to do with anything. It was what they wanted to achieve, and this is what's going on now. You know, you see it continually, and people, and if you confront people over this and explain this to people, they get a glazed look over their eye, and then they walk away and go, "Ah, he's just nuts." I've had it happen to me.
Did you get a chance to look at my email?
Yes, I didn't get a chance though to get back to you. I will.
Okay, because there's a lot of stuff I sent you. About
yes.
That. And I just remembered what I had forgotten.
What?
Regarding this Bin Laden operation. You know, initially, when it was carried off, the Chinese news agency reported that it was the Pakistani troops that captured him. Oh. And in the London Guardian 2 days ago, they interviewed a witness to the operation who said the people that stormed the compound spoke Pashtun.
Wow. Hmm.
So, you know...
Well, I don't know. Are the SEALs trained in these types of languages?
Oh, yeah.
Well,
I'm sure they
well,
are.
Yeah. It could be. Yeah. That could be. That's not, you know, not beyond the realm of imagination. But it's also, you know, the way this administration has changed the story over and over and over. Even, you know, the thing, for me, the thing that really blew my mind was these photos in the Situation Room, including one that you may be familiar with Hillary with her hand over her mouth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it comes out that there was no live feed.
Right.
So what were they looking at? Yeah.
She was saying that she had, there was some kind of medical condition or something. She was holding her mouth. You know, you never know what to believe with these people.
Well, I don't, I'm just saying, you know, the way this administration, I mean, and it's not just this one, it's all of them. I can't believe any of this.
No. No, you can't. All right, we're going to get moving, James.
All right.
For the call. Call us again, please.
All right, take care.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Bye-bye. You can't. That's why it's the Ministry of Lies. Let's go to John in Connecticut. Welcome to The Right Perspective, John.
Hey, John.
Gentlemen.
What's going on there?
Well, Minister Goebbels could have done a much better job than these weak neo-socialists.
I mean, yeah.
Too many inconsistencies, right, Frank?
Yeah. Oh, sure. That immediately starts the doubts, and that will start the rumors, and because they can't get their story straight. So if you can't trust them, why should you believe them?
I'm glad to see they're following the Bush doctrine, though.
Yeah, well, they couldn't even take advantage of something that just fell into their lap.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, if it did fall into their lap.
Yeah.
There were many in that war room that wanted him Mirandized, I'm sure.
Oh, sure, that's John. That's the whole thing. They're so filled with hypocrisies. The whole left with their hypocrisy about Nixon went into Cambodia and they have a secret operation. What the hell was this?
Just
didn't you violate
force?
Man. Right.
Can't they just admit that this is a proud act of war? And the Bush doctrine said we're going to go get them. Territorial boundaries don't matter anymore.
That's
we're
going
to get you wherever you are. Why, you know, unbelievable. Unbelievable. And that smug, cocky look on his face the last 6 months, couldn't quite, you know, figure it out. I couldn't quite understand why he had that cocky look when he was so repudiated back in November. But he had this chip ready to be played. He knew about it in August before the election.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was ready to play these chips.
Yeah, he had the ace
up
his
sleeve. The birth certificate chip with another one he was ready to play. Put that one out first, put this one out second. No one will ever talk about the birth certificate again, you know?
No.
Oh, that's over. We showed it.
That's
right. I told you, Frank, I went to the post office and I asked them, do I have to show my long-form birth certificate? And they're like, yes, yep, the one with the raised seal. Well, I go, can we accept a color photocopy off my computer, a scanned copy of it? Will you accept that? Well, no, we can't accept that. But I have to accept the foreign occupier?
Right.
Oh, two different standards, one for the patricians, one for the plebs.
Right.
Is that how it is?
That's right. Let's
see. You vile left-wing scum, you.
Right. Let's see the one with the raised seal. Let him. That's why I say John McCain, who had no balls, could have gone over to him and said, look, here's my birth certificate, pal. Let's see yours. You don't want to show it? Don't give me the crap. Show it. Here's mine. Show yours. Just like every other American.
If you look on YouTube, you can see how easily that document through that program is manipulated. They show the guy piecing that thing around. There's, you know, it's unbelievable. But in that nine-month wait, how many died or how many plans was he able to enact while he was waiting for the perfect timing? See, right after the royal wedding, right before the Monday when he was going to hand out the medals of honor, and conveniently right during the last half hour of Celebrity Apprentice so he can send Trump a zinger and preempt his programming, and then come on an hour and a half later as he preps his speech and tweaks it and gets the pronunciations up, Mamalamabad. It's all
yeah.
these stupid little sayings in there, but none of it. I didn't see a proud look on that man's face.
No.
I actually watched that speech. I let my guard down for about a second to say, okay, maybe he's going to somehow rise to this and actually be our president here. And boy, oh boy, was I sad I did that. I mean, what a joke. Right from the beginning, I'm pulling my hair out. And there was no pride in that man's face, just cocky, I told you so, I got my man, arrogant.
Do you know, John, if this had been Bush, and I forgot to say this on a shortwave introduction, because if this was Bush, right, he's a cowboy. Shoot and ask first questions later. This was frontier justice. This is nothing more than the administration of a gun-happy, kill-crazy cowboy.
Well, you know what it's good to see? It's good to see the socialists falling back in love with war.
Yeah.
With war socialism. Now you're right back in Woodrow Wilson, FDR, LBJ. They love war. That's what they use to take over the economy and do all their dirty work. So I'm glad to see their... You know, re-romanticizing it. Beautiful.
And they love the CIA suddenly, that they blame everything on since...
Forget about all that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, he's been an enemy of the military and the intelligence, but he threw a bone to Bush in the speech. No, he didn't. The only time he brought Bush up was to say, see, even Bush says all Muslims aren't bad. Even he said it. Yeah. Even he said it. I mean, why are they so worried about the reaction of the Muslim street? I mean, aren't they all moderate? That's what we keep hearing. There's only a small little fraction of extremists. The rest are all this beautiful, wonderful religion of peace that these zealots are sullying. So why is there so much worry of the reaction of all these Muslim countries? They should be loving the fact that these evildoer who's sullying their religion. The fact is, we know, and you said it to Rumsfeld, John, this is no religion of tolerance. The only people they are tolerant to, there is some tolerance in that religion, only to fellow Muslims. All non-Muslims are shit under their heel.
And they're very,
that's how
very,
it is.
They have no really, they don't have any tolerance amongst themselves. They kill more than their own.
Well, they're taught to be tolerant, but, you know, non-Muslims are vile animals. Allah does not love unbelievers, and they're destined to be a tortured soul in hell. That's what they're taught. Non-Muslims should not be taken as friends, and other religions should be violently punished. I've read that crap, piece of crap. I know what's in there, and I can quote the verses. So all these hypocrites who never even read the book, it's a disgrace. And he wrote that in his drug-induced stupors coming out of him writing that book. And it was rigidly written in stone. So there is no allowable interpretation like Jesus' word. See, that's what's good about Christianity. It allowed for tolerance interpretation, enlightenment. There is no room for that. They live in biblical times, and that's how they want humanity to stay in the dark ages.
Mm-hmm.
It's
yep.
a disgrace.
Well, you got them nailed, that's for sure.
Yep.
So.
Well,
sickness.
Why was it that, you know, why was it that there are so many people saying, why are there so many contradictions? Why are they continually, there's contradictions and there's hypocrisies. Contradictions on what they say. He did have a gun. He didn't have a gun. He went for a gun. It was his wife. It wasn't his wife. She was a human shield. She wasn't a human shield. You know, there were, the biggest now coming out is, oh, we have this great cache of computer files and hard drives and thumbnails, whatever. Wait a minute. You said he had no TV and he had no computer. So how did he have all of this?
I know. I was wondering the same thing myself. They said they had no...
computers and no TV.
Yeah, no television or anything like that. And all of a sudden they have all of these computers. They got 100 hard drives, no computers.
The rest of the world is laughing at our weakness, especially our enemies. And like you said, Frank, his mission has been to spread this radicalism by destabilizing these princes of peace. The only way to keep these animals and savages in check in these barbaric cultures is to have a strong man. And he's doing his best to let democracy reign. Well, I don't see any Patrick Henrys or Thomas No. Jeffersons in these crowds, okay? You're unleashing mobs and putting clerics. And more, and all these mobs, all they want is stronger religious Sharia law. There's no chance of any type of liberty coming out of this. Democracy in this country is gangsterism and mob rule. That's what they want. It's what they got when Hamas got elected. I mean, and this has been, like you said, Frank, his plan.
Sure.
Plan.
Sure.
I mean, and what's the matter? Did it take them 9 months for him to get up the will to attack a fellow sovereign Muslim nation, a brother nation of his? I mean, what was the reason here?
Mm-hmm.
Was it just the timing? Was it no balls? What was it?
He was waiting to see which way the wind was blowing. Take for
what
example,
other chips does he have hidden?
We don't know. We
well,
don't
well,
know.
The guy had the point. Well, he's going to show the pictures. I mean, what other shoes are going to drop here? I mean, you know they're set up. It's like this is a beautiful left-wing script that they're unraveling. It's just, no. Again, Goebbels could have done a much better job and done it quite stronger and thrown a little more nationalism to sprinkle it in there. So these lefties really got to get their script a little more convincing.
Well, listen to this,
you and
John.
I are picking up the inconsistencies like in our
sure.
sleep here, Frank. We picked them up the minute they were happening.
Listen to this.
Come
listen
on.
To
if
this
we're
letter.
Picking them up.
Listen to this letter to the Times. I am a pacifist and against the death penalty, but have no problem with the killing of Osama bin Laden, even though he had no weapons. In my mind, and I'm sure in the minds of many others, bin Laden was one gigantic weapon, and the world is better and luck will be a safer place with his demise. But wait a minute. If this was Bush, they would have said, he killed an unarmed man, he violated their sovereignty, this cowboy and his lynching, his frontier justice. See, they're a pacifist, and they're against the death penalty, but killing him is okay. Why? Because their leader is in office, that's why.
That's
yeah.
right. And yeah. how many of them were saying right then, oh, the war on terror is over now. We
yeah.
got Obama.
Right.
War on terror is over. Going right into their script. And oh, no, we didn't get any information from waterboarding. None. None from any violent interrogation. Yeah, okay. You.
Don't they use that argument all the time when it comes to shootings in the street? The police shot an unarmed man.
Yes, right. That's right.
Unbelievable.
We're so ready to blame the police right away. But when it's Obama...
yeah, well, they're going to be crying, get these SEALs and let's bring the SEALs to justice.
Listen
these
to this.
Navy SEALs who acted outside of the rules of engagement.
Listen to this one. My generation's childhood was shaped by 9/11, but many of us ardently resist allowing the violent policies it ushered in to define our adulthood. Rather than responding with jingoistic celebration, we were inspired to reflect upon the degree in which our country's relationship with the rest of the world has been defined by a decade of military conflict. We were reminded of the work before us as a generation burdened with the responsibility of repairing this damage. The celebrators on college campuses across the nation represent only a part of America's youth. Those who did not take to the streets understand that recent events demand a very different form of patriotism. You see how full of it they are? All right, we got to go, John, because okay. We got Cheryl and then Henry. Thanks for calling in, and we'll be in touch. Bye-bye. Let's go to Cheryl. Welcome to The Right Perspective, Cheryl.
Yes. Hello, Frank. Hello, John. The Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection, they're looking to take away all of our protection from us, the consumer. He's looking to put through one of his stalwart women, if you want to call her a woman, and they want to take all of our rights away. They want to be in charge and approve of all of our credit card purchases, the interest rates on the credit cards, the mortgage approvals, and put all the power into this Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. And the creation of this, they got to create this and take care of it and implement it from the Dodd-Frank bill that passed before the election last November.
They need to take away their own credit card. They got us into all this debt.
And the interest rates are sky high, John.
Yep.
The interest rate from the Federal Reserve, that he's looking to keep the federal funds rates low and all of the interest rates that the Federal Reserve takes care of. He's looking to keep all those interest rates low. So if those interest rates are low, why should our consumer credit card interest rates be sky high? But sky high, usury levels. And they probably want to make it even higher. They want to put on different penalties with everything that we purchase. They have all of these records in front of them. They have all of this data on their computers stored up. And they won't even admit to it, but everything they do is to gather data and know all of the things that the people are doing. And too much power is being put into this Bureau of Consumer Financial Protection. So the Republicans, finally, at long last, they found a bone in their back that they could say, oh, I'm not made out of jelly. And 44... of the Republicans in the Senate all got together. They sent a letter to the guy who occupies in the White House and let him know that they are not going to pass on any of the people he's looking to put through to head up this agency, and they're looking to cut him off at the pass with what he's trying to do with this bureau. He's trying to say, well, you know, it's part of the Dodd-Frank bill. Well, Barney, Blarney, Baloney, Frank, I wouldn't trust him with any amount of money. He was instrumental in bringing down the housing market with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
Yep.
And as for Dodd, it's good that he retired. His father was censured when his father was a senator also from Connecticut. And his financial dealings, I would say, take a look into. How come he got sweetheart mortgage deals and everything? We have to do things based upon what this guy who stepped out of the Senate, what he decided on is good for us. Too much power is being put into the bureaus that the guy in the White House is looking to set up, and they got to stop it with these unions. The unions are causing trouble. Kansas, they have problems with the unions. Wisconsin, you already know that they're having problems with the unions. It's still going on out here in New Jersey, the garbage state, with the New Jersey Educational Association. Talking about New Jersey, you remember the mayor with the woman mayor with the eye patch, the black eye patch, Barbara Boggs Zsigmond. Her father was Hale Boggs, and she died from cancer, but she was a beloved mayor, and she had that eye patch on her eye, and she died in 1990. One of her sons, his name is Paul. He was arrested. Trenton police director. Let's see.
Hey, Cheryl,
chief of staff.
Cheryl, there's a guy Bob Deutsch in Pennsylvania that listens to the show. He's a very dedicated listener, and I tell you, he's a big fan of yours. You're becoming a personality. He said Cheryl is really making your show. He says, you've got to give Cheryl more time. He says her calls are informative, they're intelligent, and brilliant. He says, when she goes on, I just listen in rapt attention, and I play the podcast of her call 4 and 5 times in a row because it's packed with so much information. And she says she really is a major help of your show. She could be a big-time broadcaster very easily. He says, take my word for it. I look forward to Cheryl's calls every week, and I put them on my podcast to listen to while I'm driving to work so I could learn more. Kudos to Cheryl. Bob Deutsch in Pennsylvania.
This is wonderful. I'm up in the air with delight. Thank you.
All right, Cheryl.
Thank you. And much love.
Okay.
Much love. I appreciate all of that. Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, we got Henry Pinkham on the line from South Africa, so you could wrap it up. Yes.
Yes.
Bob is listening. You're listening, Bob. Thanks very much for those lovely, kind words.
Yes. And I just want to say, in conclusion, in Scotland, they had an election. The guy who let out the Lockerbie bomber, he got elected. And one of the things on their agenda is to look to get independence from Britain.
Wow.
This is terrific. On that, give my love also to Henry. And have a good week.
Thank you, Cheryl.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks a lot, Cheryl.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. We've got our guest from South Africa.
Hello, Africa. The World Service of the Right Perspective presents Hello, Africa. Shedding the light of truth on news from the dark continent. Hello, Africa. We ask the audience to please rise. Ladies, gently place your right hand over your heart. Gentlemen, kindly remove your hats and remain standing for Die Stimme. Returning to the Right Perspective microphones is our good friend, retired SADF Colonel Henry Pinkham, to discuss various topics that are going on in the news in South Africa, which you are not hearing back here in the West.
And so we welcome back to The Right Perspective our good friend, Henry Pinkham. Goedemorgen, Henry.
Goedemorgen, friend.
Hi, Henry.
Goedemorgen, John, news guy, and other Cheryl.
Yes.
Thanks for having me on this morning.
Well, thanks for calling.
Yes. Hoe gaat het aan je vrouw?
Het gaat bij goed met mijn vrouw. She's going to work in a couple of minutes. So she's busy just finishing off, she's just about ready to go. And she's not looking forward to working on the Saturday.
I'm fine.
But it's one of those things. You sometimes have to do it.
Yep.
Henry, let me ask you first. What is going on with the trial of the racist Julius Malema of the ANC Youth League? There was a big article about it in the Sunday New York Times, where they tried to say that, oh, this was just a manner of speech from the so-called time of the struggle of the ANC, and it wasn't meant to actually be taken literally. They attack the barrister who was cross-examining Malenga as, he's this relic from the era of apartheid. And what is the actual disc of the...
The actual situation is that Malema is actually a relic from the era of the struggle. He's actually very stirring up trouble as far as it goes, and he's an imbecile. He doesn't know what's going on, and, well, of course, he's got another agenda. You see, we people in the West, we think in a certain way, but we normally cannot see we cannot think in the way the communists think. And this guy is a communist. He thinks in another way than we do. He's not interested in what is best for the country, best for the people. He's interested in still getting the whites, getting at the whites and attacking them. For them, the old Angola war is still going on. And they're still trying to get the white man out of the country, which is the goose that lays the golden eggs. And they don't look beyond their eyelids. That's the way these people do things. They don't understand the world. They don't understand the international world. They don't understand the people from overseas are looking at them and disinvesting from this country because of things which Malema says.
Now, how is the trial being perceived in the press? What is he being charged with exactly? And if found guilty, what would be the sentence? What would be the penalty?
Frank, I was a bit busy this week, so I didn't quite follow everything about it. But the main thing is that most of the press, the press is actually divided. And some of the people actually report the facts as they are, and most of them don't. So we rely heavily on the Internet as an independent media which is not influenced by money, power, and bias by some communities. So the thing to do is to actually look at the Internet and see even some news media like Radio Pretoria and so on don't always reflect both sides, because most of these guys still rely on the news agencies like say Press Association and Reuters and these, and they only see one side, so it's quite difficult to get a balanced view. So that is why one has to also look at the internet and get a balanced view from that.
Right. So let's say
it's the right perspective.
If he's found guilty, what would be the penalty? Would he go to jail, or would he just be fined? What exactly would happen?
He can actually be be told to pay a fine because he's actually disregarded a court order. But I doubt if he'll go to jail for something like this because. There's no actual law against seeing something unless they actually make a law. But the main thing is that he is causing a lot of distress among a lot of people. And that's not only whites, it's black people as well. So this guy is extremely unpopular and he's losing votes for the ANC in the coming municipal elections. So Malema is making trouble, and he's actually giving the ANC a bad image.
Well, that's good. Now, could you tell us about, you sent me some great photos of a Boer rally. Could you tell us about that and how it went?
Yeah, you see, what we have discovered is that you could do almost anything and nothing works. So when the Boer folk wants to get wants to disentangle itself from the conglomeration of peoples and nations in South Africa, we have to do something different. We have to do something right. In the past, we've relied on all kinds of political parties and organizations. And the normal things people do to organize themselves into groups and religions and things like that. But it's time for us to actually get rid of our differences. That is differences in religion, differences in groups, political differences and things like that. So if we want to become free, what we've got to do is to appear before our God as one united nation. And that is the only thing that we can do. If we do that, he said he will heal our country once we do that. But we have to prove to Yahweh that we are a united people, and this is what we're trying to do now. So this is what the whole parade on in Middelburg was all about. It went off very well. There were about 1,500 people, which is not bad. It's a quite a good turnout these days, because you just don't get this amount of people together anymore because of various reasons. People are afraid to get out of their homes because they might get robbed. They might get, you know, people might be waiting for them when they get home and attack them, and all these reasons. So 1,500 people was quite a good turnout, and this was just the beginning. This was just the first rally that we're having. There will be some more, and the next one will quite probably be at Lichtenburg in the old Western Transvaal, where we expect quite a large gathering of people. In fact, the guys at Lichtenburg got together on Thursday, and they tried to decide on a date. The first date that was set was 16, and they were the whole freedom of the white people will actually start from here. So this is the nation, the white people in South Africa is the hope that the white people everywhere, all across the world, should actually have, because this is the point where it's going to start.
And like, what goes on at the rally? You have speeches there, and
there was actually one main speech, but we started from the Middelburg Cemetery, which has a large open area around it, so that gave people enough space to gather at. And then we actually parked the cars at the stadium where we were supposed to walk to, and from there the buses moved people to the starting point again. And at the starting point, well, everybody got together, and then the guys who didn't have flags actually bought flags there. We had a couple of hundred flags made and sold them there quite cheaply so that everybody could actually afford one. And every kid could have a small flag, so we supplied flags to the guys who didn't have any, and the other people bought the flags that they had. And then there was a large number of horses, more than 100, I think something like 150 horses, that moved ahead of the procession, just behind the police cars. And then came the people walking to the stadium. That was about approximately 4 miles. It's a little more than 4 kilometers, so let's say about 4 miles, which we walked. And then behind the people came the vehicles, light delivery vans, and also motorbikes at the back. So it was quite something to see. And the people on the sidewalks came, came out, and some of them joined the procession and walked with us to the stadium. There was lots of stuff to buy, like food and reading materials. And some of the schools and some private people actually made some food which they sell, like hot dogs and stuff. And it was really something nice. And then we sang a couple of songs, and we let loose some balloons in the colors of the flag. And then the horses actually said farewell, and there was this one little guy, Henny Swart, whom I know very well. He actually sat on his horse. The horse took a bow. I don't know how he taught the horse to do that, but the horse bowed its front legs, and then he took off his hat and waved to the crowd, and that was the end of the day. But then people stayed at the stadium and actually enjoyed the day by talking, chatting with friends and with new made friends, and the whole thing went off like that. Then they announced church services in Pretoria and Boksburg. The one in Pretoria last week went off very well, and quite a few people who were at Middelburg actually joined the church service. And it was actually very well attended, and we're expecting the same thing to happen at Boksburg over the weekend. this weekend, Sunday. So they should be a good service. Because, as I say, this is not a denominational service. This is a service which is supposed to bring all the people together, all the different religions. And, you know, as we mostly all Christians, and identity Christians, we, the main idea is to bring together the Christians and the identity Christians and to disregard the differences in the religions and to remove the differences in organizations and things like that. So that is what this church service will be all about in Boxburg this weekend.
Now, you sent me, I guess it was an advertisement from a Boer paper, I think, showed, looked like a commando. This guy looked really good with the horse. And it said, what did it say? Ein Drachmach. Drach. Is that what that is? Because it's also on one of the buttons I have.
Yeah,
how do you pronounce that?
I'm not quite sure what it said there.
What did it say?
In Mach. The Middleburg Observer had a good article, and also it was shown on one of the television channels.
Yeah.
But people are still very shy to show these things. They still want to create the impression that the whole South African nation is one nation, which is not true. We are split up in different nations and different peoples, and well, we ethnical Boers are a different people altogether, and we're not interested in talking about it. We are a different nation, so you know, we want to maintain that. And the same thing goes for a lot of these other nations in South Africa, like some of the black nations.
Sure.
Don't want to mix with everybody. Don't want to become part of the new South Africa.
No. Now, you had sent me a story about a police, what was it, they beat someone very badly.
Yeah.
You know, please explain that to the people so they
know. Yeah, you see, Frank, that's the other main thing is that the ANC is losing power because it's trying to drive in wedges amongst the people on the one hand. On the other hand, they are saying that we're all the same and we're all one nation, but they're not doing that. So we find increasing evidence of black police attacking whites. And this thing is on the increase. At an alarming pace. Now, about 2 weeks ago, there was a white woman who went to the police station to report something, and she accidentally ran into another car while she was parking, and a black policeman came out to the police station and shot her point blank in a car. And this type of thing is happening over and over and over now. And, you know, police thuggery is on the increase. Police are actually involved in a lot of crime, whether it's attacks on people or burglaries of shops or even attacks on shops during daytime. And we find that this thing is totally on the increase. So a short while ago, I think it was about a week ago, these guys actually went to the two white guys actually went to a service station to get their tires fixed up. Now, what the problem was with the tires, I don't know, but apparently they had damaged two of the tires of their vehicle. And they went to this service station to get it fixed. So the closed-circuit television records show that these black policemen arrived there, actually attacked these white guys. I'm not sure whether there was a white guy with them, but apparently they attacked the white guys and they kicked them very hard in the ribs, and they actually hit them and jumped on their heads and things like that, which a policeman, of course, is not allowed to do, but these guys are so power crazy that this is the type of thing that we get more and more and more every day, every week. So this is becoming a regular thing these days, so even the newspapers don't report on it anymore.
It's
just not news anymore.
Of course not.
We have a listener also in South Africa, and his grandfather was murdered a couple of months back. And I had sent this email over to John. I don't know why it didn't go through.
Yeah.
I sent it over to him earlier today. I wanted to read it to you. And he had all of the members of his family that have been murdered and assaulted. It's horrible, and you don't hear about it over here in the United States. Henry, you just hear this BS. Yeah, that's why there's a program, and I'm glad we're able to speak to you.
Yeah.
And I know our dear friends will be listening to this and to the podcast. You know, they have this American TV show called The Bachelor, where they get some guy who can't meet a girl. You know, like a guy that could be a doctor or this, that. A guy owned a couple of bars and restaurants, but he couldn't meet the right one. So they set him up with these broads that really nice looking, that they want to meet, you know, the bachelor, and he's going to marry them. You know, this show goes on, you know, for a while. Well, the final episode where he did the proposing to the girl took place in Kapstadt. Now, Henry, if you would look at this program, it's like paradise. It's gorgeous. Yeah. There's no crime. It's just wonderful. And so they'll get, you know, they get the suckers in the West who are going to go there as tourists, and then they're going to get robbed, you know, if they're lucky, not, you know, murdered, whatever. And such is the nature. I looked at this, I said, you know, damn it, this is the nature of how the Ministry of Lies used propaganda against the Buddha folk. Because if you go back to the 1980s and 70s, all you ever saw were Bantus being hit by the police, the commandos out there riding, the shanty towns, it's horrible, and every single day. So what they did is, they wanted to destroy that nation through propaganda by depicting specific things and showing them over and over, not showing the rest of the country how beautiful, how stable, clean, and civilized it was. No, they don't want to show that. But now that you have savages running amok over there, you have murder, you have one of the highest crime rates in the world, that they don't show you. They show this schmuck with these girls and, it's just beautiful over here. I can't. And that's what really angers me, Henry. They did a number.
We're actually exposed to the same propaganda. We've got a show here which is very popular called 7th Alarm or 7th Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And this is this runs in a scenario in Joburg, in one of the suburbs there. White suburb, or previously white suburb, where a lot of artists and people live, and it's actually shot there. But the whole show is actually intended to show you how well the various races live together and work together and play together and this type of thing. And people in South Africa just don't live like that.
No.
But when people watch the show, they slowly start trying to do things like it's done in the show.
Right.
And people actually start believing that this is the way to do things. And this is what our young people see, and they actually see the same thing happening to them, because it's being forced down on us.
Right.
And you're forced to live with all these different guys from different races, and the blacks are forced to live with the whites, which they don't want to do.
No.
So, I mean, at least if I go on holiday, I'd like to talk to people like myself. I don't like to talk to people of various races and to mix with everybody else. I like to talk to my family, firstly, and I like to talk to their families. I like to talk to people who look like me and who talk like me and have got my same culture. But you are actually forced by the mass media and by the places you work for to actually forget what you are and to mix with all these different races. Like my wife, Matru, is a sister in one of the large hospitals. She's being forced to attend some of the holidays, so-called holidays, which is also a propaganda days rather, but they passed off as holidays, and some of them are actually communist holidays,
right?
Which are being celebrated here, and she's supposed to dress like these guys, dress with soccer jerseys and rugby jerseys and things like that. Some days they're supposed to wear ordinary clothes to work, whereas she's a sister. She's in fact. You expect a nurse to wear a uniform. But some days they just disregard this, and they look just like the patients. And it just does not work in an environment where you're supposed to have discipline. This type of thing just doesn't work. But they're forced into this, and they're forced to wear these little red and white anti-AIDS
buttons,
ribbons, and things like that.
Please.
Whether they want to or not, and I mean, this is against the principles. So she just refuses to wear it.
Yeah.
But if you don't refuse ardently, then they get you to do what they want. And this is how you're actually being pulled into the new world order, whether you like to or not, and whether you want to be there or not.
Well, Henry,
and this is the main problem with everything in the West these days.
Yeah, political correctness is spread throughout the world now. Henry, we're going to wrap it up. You have something to say in Buddha Tao to the Buddha folk.
Thank you, friend Frank, and thanks to all the Boos who are listening, whatever language you're speaking, whether it's Afrikaans, English, German, Portuguese, whatever. Goeiedag vir almal, en baie dankie dat jy geluister het, en baie dankie dat jy hierdie radio program ondersteun, en baie dankie aan Frank, en aan John, en News Guy, en baie dankie aan Cheryl, aan haar kontra, ons geniet het baie.
And we hope you'll come back again soon. And tot ziens, ekatiteki baie geniet. Gat zien jou aan die boerenbal.
I could actually pick up the show again this morning. Previously, I had some difficulty picking it up.
Oh.
Because the player I was using on my
computer
didn't quite work well.
Yeah, we've been having some trouble with that lately with some of the players. I don't know why that is all of a sudden.
Yeah, and I actually had to subscribe to 7, what's the thing called? The radio that carries your program.
TalkStream Live? Oh,
I couldn't get TalkStream Live to work, and I couldn't get
this
On shortwave?
No, the radio that you actually work on.
The short
WWCR.
Perspective works on
WWCR.
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't get that.
Oh.
Okay. Hmm. So anyway, thanks. I could get it now, and thank you very much for all the trouble you're going to. And thanks for everything else.
Okay.
I'll be listening on my earphones.
All right, we'll be talking.
All right, Henry.
Soon. Bye, Duncan.
Thank you.
Good
day. Have a nice night, brother. Bye, Del.
Take care.
Goodbye.
And that was Colonel Henry Pinkham letting you know what's going on over there. And later this month, we'll be having a show about a new book that's coming out in Afrikaans about the Boer War. It's about a man's grandfather's experience during the Boer War. And it's going to be really interesting because the Boer War is really, really not talked about in the West. It's funny, there's a new novel about the Spanish Civil War. And right away it's a lie because it talks about the Battle of Madrid, but it doesn't talk about, and you know, it has about how, you know, they were being bombed by, the Franco's airplanes, the Falange. But it never talked about the Soviet Air Force, and it never talked that in the Battle of Madrid, more socialists and anarchists were killed. More socialists and anarchists were killed behind the lines by Bolsheviks during the Spanish Civil War. That's why George Orwell saw what a farce it was, and he denounced Bolshevism. He was a dedicated Bolshevik, and he denounced it. And that's why he wrote 1984 about the Stalin purges and Bolshevik Russia, what it was really like. And it's confirmed if you read The Forsaken. I know John from Connecticut has read it. And it's all reflected. Everything, if you read 1984 and you read The Forsaken about Americans who went to the Soviet entity, you see how Orwell wrote 1984 was based on what it was like there. And he wrote Animal Farm because it was a trauma for him. He saw the real face of Bolshevism during the Spanish Civil War. So that's what they do. They like to manipulate, and they like to turn it around. Well, here's a real manipulator, Bill from Chappaqua. Welcome to the right, back to the right perspective, Mr. President. I hope you've been all right. We haven't heard from you in a while.
Well, I've just been, you know, doing some reflection on the recent demise of our number one wanted guy there, Osama bin Laden.
And
caught him with his pants down. I'm surprised they didn't catch him on the toilet or something. Poking his head out, getting shot at. I mean, it sounds like something that used to go on in my neck of the woods there, out in the country there in Arkansas.
You know, I was thinking maybe you should get into selling Pakistani real estate. I mean, this guy paid $1 million for that shithole. Isn't that unbelievable?
It doesn't sound like he got his money's worth there.
I mean,
you think he have a better security system.
I mean, the guy that sold it to him was some salesman. You imagine that, $1 million for that crap? That thing's a hut.
I thought the American dollar was in the tank there. He's got that check doesn't sound much better than some of the places in my old home state, Arkansas. And not counting the library, of course. There, my presidential type library.
So,
which actually has running water, plumbing, and indoor plumbing.
Well, how do you feel about that? That Obama got all the glory and you didn't get anything out of this. So why didn't you come down to New York to Ground Zero?
Well, I've already been there. I was looking for the pizza delivery guy that day. I wondered why my pizza was late, and I got worried and And there I was out there picking through the debris there, trying to find him, and not succeeding. So it was a pretty sad day for me.
He invited you and George Bush, and you didn't want to go. Everybody was
we wanted to let Obama have his moment, you know. I mean, especially if he knocks over one of them teleprompters there, you know, he's got two of them things going at the same time. That way he looks like he's talking to people to the left and the right of himself. And even though he really doesn't like people to the right of himself. I don't know. I don't think I'd want to be on stage there given the fact that, he ain't doing so well in the polls, though, lately. And the story keeps changing on this guy. I mean, did he have a gun? Didn't he? Did they really set out to shoot him? Did he have a teddy bear bomb or something? I don't know. I mean, I'm not privy to any of that stuff.
Well, what did Hillary tell you about it? She was, she said she was watching it live, wasn't she?
I think they were actually watching a Tex Avery cartoon there because they lost transmission of the video for like 25 minutes, so they had to fill it in with something. So they got a couple Screwball Squirrel classics and ran those. That would explain some of the expressions there.
I mean, the way she had her hand over her mouth.
I guess it was pretty. It must have been a flashback to when she was going in the Kosovo there and dodging bullets and stuff. Darn, you think those guys would be better shots with all the ammo they shoot over there in Kosovo?
When she was,
I wish she'd put her hand.
Yeah, she looked, I've never seen her where she couldn't talk. That was unbelievable.
I think if she put her hand over her mouth more often, she wouldn't be as chunky as she is right now. Maybe those ankles wouldn't be so dang, those cankles wouldn't be such a prominent feature.
Now, she said that the Packies were our friends. I mean, I didn't know that. I mean, why is she contradicting, why are they all contradicting each other?
Well, that way, it was kind of like when I was in office. I mean, you try to be on both sides of the issue. That way, you can't be accused of playing favorites. Worked for me, anyway.
Now, what have you been doing all of this time? Where have you been? Have you just been relaxing up in Chappaqua, or been at the library in Arkansas, or down at the townhouse in Georgetown? We haven't heard from you.
Well, I've been taking care of some important former presidential-type business that I'm not at. Well, I might be writing my new sequel to my book there. And I think I got in a speaking tour, just a short one.
No.
At the local strip club.
Have you been overseas any?
Oh, off and on there. It wears on you after a while. It's just not as much fun there when you don't have the big bunch of reporters following you around asking all kinds of dumb questions all the time, and women snapping their underwear at you. I mean, it gets to be... Well, I tell you, I can't get enough of that, but in some ways it gets to be old hat after a while.
Yeah, huh?
But, you know, he got him. He got that well, not him personally, but it happened on his watch, and I don't know how that's going to help him in the long run, but I guess he could have taken him like 2 years ago, but he was too busy golfing and meeting with important people and celebrities and that Trumka guy and running his little schemes there and sending, having people bust into Republican governorships there to cause trouble.
Well,
the usual stuff that we like to pull off here to kind of bolster our numbers and keep our constituents occupied.
Wow.
I'm probably divulging a lot. Jimmy Carville would have popped in and told me to shut my mouth, but, well, he's doing some kind of commercial there.
Wow. Well, you know, this guy Trump, he's richer than you. How does that make you feel? Does he always say to you, by the way, I'm rich?
Well, I would have taken that pace car deal that he turned down. I mean, I don't know how, I'm not that good behind the wheel. I usually have people driving for me. I guess if they hit a rumble seat, I could at least ride along in the pace car. I don't know how the Secret Service would keep up with me. I mean, I don't know how the Secret Service would have kept up with Trump there. If he announces his candidacy, then they'd have to sign Secret Service and then it'd be hard to keep up with him in that car.
Chris Matt?
They'd be riding in style on Trump 1, is his personal jet.
That's right.
That has to be quite a ride.
Sure. Did he ever offer to take you on his jet?
Are you kidding? He doesn't let a rube like me get near him. I mean, there was that one time that that Dick Clark and those guys, they sent that Gorbachev lookalike over to Trump Towers and they fooled him. I don't know if that's going to affect his campaign any, that he was a fan of Mikhail Gorbachev, as was I.
Hey,
I think he's still out there. Gorbachev, that
oh,
is.
Yeah,
I don't know what he's doing.
He's hanging around. He's like Jimmy Carter, you know, trying to still get some publicity, like you.
I think he's running that Green Cross thing, whatever that is, to try and hamstring the West there by imposing environmental-type restrictions on manufacturing.
Hey, we got a couple of really important questions from John from Connecticut.
Oh.
It says, what did Mr. Prez think of Bin Laden's wife we saw from the raid? Is he interested in her now that she's available?
Well, I think once she's healed up from that gunshot wound, she should put some ice on that. I mean, that's my advice to a lot of women. But
some people never change.
I'd have to get a good look at her. I don't think the quality of that footage did her justice.
And now John wants to know, from Connecticut, would you ever throw Hillary in front of the bullet when they came for him?
You know, I thought of that, but she'd probably catch the bullet and throw it back. She's that tough, you know. She might be able to deflect with a lamp or an ashtray.
Yeah.
kind of like the Matrix. I mean, stuff like that could happen.
And Chris Matthews attacked your wife. He said that her explanation, watching the video, lacked humanity. He said, I guess I understand why the Secretary of State said what she just said there.
Well, that was pretty gutsy of him to use the most commonly used word of the week here.
Yeah, they almost use that as much as they use gravitas.
He said, but my guess and my God, what's wrong with having a decent reaction to a horrific picture? People are killing people. I prefer humanity, and that's all I'm going to say. You're going to let him get away with that? You're going to let him say that about your beloved, your partner?
You know, I should have a nice talk with that guy and give him a good talking to and thank him wholeheartedly and for taking the heat off of me, because now she can be focused on kicking his butt and not kicking mine whenever she walks in the door over here.
Yeah, you know, Mr. President, I'm really shocked that you didn't
take advantage of Obama's invite down to the World Trade Center. I mean, you're the only guy that could out-I and me him.
Well, if I have to do it, I'm minding it getting out. If he sent Air Force One to pick me up, that would be a done deal.
Yeah,
but since I have to do it, I'm minding it.
You gave us three farewell speeches on George Bush's inauguration day. You don't like to get off the stage. I was really shocked.
Well, it's so hard to say goodbye. I had to do it three times.
Everybody wanted to see you down there. Everybody was looking forward.
Well, I'm sorry I disappointed all my fans, but I mean, I can't be in places at once. And you know, once tea time is set, I mean, you're expected there on the green. You're expected where you're expected.
So now that he's got all the glory, how do you feel? I mean, nobody even talks. I mean, it was like, oh, Bill Clinton's not coming. Yawn.
Well, I just say enjoy it while it lasts there, buddy. Because, I mean, it, like I used to say during my campaign, it's the economy, stupid.
All right, Mr. President, we got to get going. We got one more call, and then we're getting out of here. It's great to hear from you again, and please, sir, gracious with your presence again. We truly want to. How'd you like them one thing? How'd you like them using the name Geronimo and for the operation, and then the Beringians PO'd about it?
Well, I think any publicity is good publicity. So, I mean, they could have said Crazy Horse, but that wouldn't rolled off the tongue as well, or what was that other guy there? any other Indian chief there probably would have worked out fine. But well, when you jump out of an airplane, there you always say that. And I always wondered what would Geronimo say if he jumped out of an airplane.
Myself.
Me. Oh, I'm gonna catch that the next Indian game in casino. I just know it. But well, you take it the way it comes.
All right. Thank you, sir.
What one of my four dads always told me. Okay. Well, you guys have a fine night.
Dads.
And we'll talk to you again when we talk to you.
Okay. Bye bye. One of his four dads. Let's go to Henry, who's calling back from South Africa, wants to tell us a story before we go home. Welcome back, Henry. Achanah McGinnis, Meneh.
Yes.
Thanks, John. Thanks, Frank. And please never ever take this guy off the show. He is hilarious, and I think he's a very fast thinker.
Okay.
And he's really good. I always enjoy listening to him after Hello Africa. Frank, I'd like to talk about something. I received a letter on Friday. Well, when was it? Thursday. From an email letter from a guy called Michael in New Zealand.
Yes.
And this guy told me about a flag he had received, an American flag that is. And he said to me that he received it from his mother-in-law, who had remembered a ship running aground on in Mozambique on one of the beaches. And he said that somebody by the name of Henry Pinkham was working on this boat, and then he asked me whether it was me, and I said yes, it was me. And then I told him the story, and he was quite fascinated by it. And now this story is taking all kinds of interesting turns. What happened was that I was working on one of the boats owned by Tidewater Marine in Houston, Texas, and we were actually exporting for oil. So these boats were the oil exploration boats. What they did was they used to have a matrix of lines, each about a mile or more apart. And the boats exporting for oil actually sailed on these lines, and then behind the boat came a table filled with kerosene, and you know, it's a thickish pipe I'm not quite sure how large the pipe was, but it's a plastic pipe, transparent, filled with kerosene and with electronic cables in between with sensors placed so far apart. And then there used to be an air gun on board, and which is actually a device which pumps in air into this space, and then it lets the air go, and then you get something which sounds like an explosion, and then the sound actually reflects from the sea bottom, so that the echoes are picked up by this cable, which is about a mile long, running behind the ship. And this is the way which was used in those days for checking whether there were any oil domes beyond the sea bottom, you know, the bottom of the sea. And I was working on one of these boats, and there was another supply boat also ran by Tidewater Marine in Mozambique. And this is a supply boat that was working with us. And one day, we actually saw a storm arising, and we actually could see the water spout, which was very high in the air, and you could actually see the clouds above it and so on. So it was actually a small tornado raining down upon us. And, the two captains decided to anchor about 700 yards, or maybe a little bit more, maybe a little less, from the beach. And there actually was a tourist hotel right there on the beach. So while we were waiting there for the storm to blow past, the sea got very rough, and the supply boat's anchor snapped. The anchor chain snapped, and the boat actually ran aground onto the reef around the rock reef around the coast. So the crew actually just climbed over the barrier reef, and they actually walked through the shallow water to the hotel, where they were fed with coffee and blankets and whatever there was. The ship was sitting on the reef. Actually, this ship's name, or the supply boat's name, was actually the ship, SHIP. Which actually was an abbreviation of the actual name, which was a motor vessel ship tide. And as you know, probably most of Tidewater Marine's boats have tide behind their names. Now, the ship tide was renamed ship in Egypt, where the name was apparently not acceptable to the Egyptians. So when it came down the Suez, it went under this name, and it came to Mozambique, and it was named the ship. The boat I was working on was the Jet Tide. So what happened was, when this when the ship tide ran aground, the Jet Tide stood by watching and making sure that the guys on the ship were safe. And then the jet tide started moving back to Maputo, or Lorenzo Marx, as it was called these days. So eventually went, got there through the storm where the American flag was actually damaged to such an extent that they had to knock it in the center, and the Portuguese flag was actually ripped in two, so the whole red part was ripped off.
Wow.
And the storm was very bad. In fact, the logbook read that the waves that broke over the jet tide were about 30 foot high.
Hmm.
And this was the official entry in the logbook, if I remember it correctly. And, it was very bad. It was a very bad storm. And we were lucky to survive it and to arrive in Lourenço Marques or Maputo. And then when we got there, I suppose I was a guy with the least experience on the boat, so they could miss me for a couple of weeks. So I was sent to the beach where the other boat was stranded, and of course I stayed in the hotel at their expense, and myself and the Portuguese customs guy stayed in the hotel, and we had a marvelous time there. After the day's work, when we had to unload ship tide and take everything off it that could be removed and imported into Mozambique so it could be exported to America again afterwards. I was supposed to oversee the offloading on our side, and so I worked with the customs guy the whole day unloading the boat, and at night there wasn't much to do in the hotel, so of course we were sitting in the bar most of the night, and we partied with two South African couples who were there, and eventually some other guests arrived from time to time, and there was a Portuguese family, very high-ranking people, and this beautiful girl, of course, I remember her date, her name up to this day, but she had a string of about seven names. Anyway, so eventually,
I didn't know you were such a party animal, Henry.
Well, I didn't know it either, but that was those days when I could still afford it. So the flag, apparently, the American flag from the ship tide actually went to one of the South African couples that were there. There were two of them, two couples, the flag was actually handed by this woman to her son-in-law afterwards. So the guy I got the email from was the son-in-law of the woman who was on holiday there at the time when the ground. And when this guy contacted me, it was quite interesting to talk to him, to actually write to him and exchange news. So I heard about the barman at that time, who was very kind to us, and he always closed his bar at about 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock in the morning instead of 12 o'clock at night. So this guy was actually helped us enjoy the time. He was murdered during the Angolan War, or rather during the Mozambican War. He was actually murdered by blacks, although he had just recently been married, so I don't know what became of his wife, but this is the news I actually got from the lady who gave the flag to her son-in-law. And this story actually needs to be told. And what I need now is I need for guys who used to work on the jet tide or the ship tide to actually contact me. I have asked Tidewater Marine for photos of the boats and any information they can supply, but they haven't answered me yet, so I'm still get answers from Tidewater Marine. But I would like very much, if there's anybody listening in the south of the states, mostly Texas and Louisiana and people like places like that, where some of the crew members came from and some of the guys working on the boats. If anybody there remembers that, if they can contact me, I'd appreciate it very much. My email address is wolf, W-O-L-F, underscore, at L-A-N-T-I-C, Lantic, dot net.
Okay.
So if anybody that used to work on these boats or knows anybody who used to work on one of these boats, can contact me, I'd appreciate it very much. And we could actually put out a good story and maybe publish it on something like National Geographic or some other large international medium.
Yeah, well, give your Henry, give your email address again.
Quite very interesting reading.
Give your email address. Wolf underscore Atlantic.
No, wolf underscore at. The at sign.
Okay, at.
And then L-A-N-T-I-C, Lantic.
Lantic. Dot net.
Net.
Okay.
Okay, Henry. All right, good luck with that. Thanks for calling back with that interesting
story.
Yeah,
we could use you drilling for some oil here.
if there were any oil in the yard.
Obama isn't.
I would like to drill for it myself.
All right, buy a donkey.
Yeah, thank you very much, guys.
All right, Henry.
Good scenes.
Have a nice day.
All right, and I'm going to...
It's the first time Henry ever called back.
Yeah, well, he could get through now, so... Yeah. All right, and hello, Africa, later in the month, but this time we'll be discussing a new book about the author's grandfather who fought in the Boer War. Do you know what? I was reading this book that the British, the number of troops that the British sent to fight the Boers were more than the actual population of the Boers, women and children included.
Oh, boy.
And they couldn't beat them. They had to literally put the women and children in camps and murder them and burn their farms and kill their animals. It's unbelievable. All right, we'll see you I'll see you next week. I don't know what happened to Steve of Manhattan. He vanished.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe, I think somebody said his hours changed or something on his job.
Oh, because that guy Bob, who wrote that lovely, lovely...
To Cheryl, yes.
To Cheryl, he said that Steve was angry because you had somebody coming on at 11 or something, and you told Steve he had to call back, and he said that Frank had built Steve up. Well, Steve is a good friend. He'll always be welcome on The Right Perspective. But isn't that nice that Bob Deutsch from Pennsylvania wrote that nice letter up to Cheryl? See, Cheryl was well-liked. Thanks very much, Bob, for writing. You really made her day.
A mainstay, Cheryl.
Yeah, yeah. A little kindness goes a long way, Bob. All right, good night, folks. See you next week.
Yeah. All right, Frank. Elvis,
give me my tape.
Let me give Elvis his tape here. All right. Hold on, folks. I'll be right with you there. All right, we're back in business. All right. Whoop. Hey, did I... Frank, I didn't mark up your tape with a label here.
Oh.
I got to get you a label.
Okay.
I think maybe I put it on the wrong tape. Hold on 1 second. We'll correct that. What's today, May 6th?
Yeah.
May 6th is...
Hey, how was Cinco de Mayo yesterday?
Yeah, whoopee. I don't even know why we even bother mentioning that in this country, Cinco de Mayo, because that celebrates the Mexican defeat of the French, kicking them out of their country, The first time. The French came back and defeated them later, but they don't tell you about that. But the first victory of the Mexicans over the French, kicking them out of their country. So, and we have to celebrate it with them? Get out of here. It has nothing to do with us. Take a walk. Cinco de Mayo. I'm surprised. I'm sure Obama had something to say about that.
Oh, sure. And Scott from Florida said Cinco de Mayo isn't even important in Mexico.
Yeah, that's true.
You know? Oh, Cinco de Mayo. Oh, it's so wonderful.
Yeah, we make a big deal about it here because these people need something to be proud about. There's not too much.
Hey, before I go, yeah, there was an email sent to us. It says, the fact that the Beringians, and I'm glad more and more people are using the name Beringian. See, they're beginning to realize that's the proper name. Object to the term Geronimo to refer to the Bin Laden killing. But they didn't object to Geronimo Pratt, a.k.a. Geronimo G. Jaga, for a Black Panther white killer. Oh, yeah, that's different. And that's right. Oh, my. See, anything. They see a triumph of America.
Because they think white. Just like some other people in this country. Okay. Everything is, you know, the whites.
Oh, we're offended. I'm offended what you did to my great white Caucasian Salutrian ancestors. I'm offended by that. And George the Atheist says it's only celebrated. Wait, here it is. It's only celebrated in the Puebla area of Mexico. So, once again, they have a phony holiday. Ooh, I tell you, this country, the stuff you see going on, it's
yeah, anything that's foreign to America is holy, you know, sacred. But the Constitution, you can walk all over it.
That's right. And that's why I every time they keep saying with these Varangians, oh, it is sacred land. It's all sacred. You know, in this book, The March of the Titans, he goes over a number of Salutrian sites. These are sacred to me. They're sacred to us. But how did the Beringians get away with stealing our history from us? By saying that it was found on sacred Beringian land. And this Native Repatriations Act, you got to get somebody in who's going to sign an executive order nullifying that. Because they are stopping the research of history. All right, I'll see you next week. Thanks very much, folks.
Yep. Oh, thank you, Frank. And actually, Frank stayed an hour extra tonight than he normally does now. He's got a lot of things to do on the weekend, and it's good to get home a little bit early so you're not so tired in the morning. Yeah. So, you know, there will come a time, though, where we will be doing this show more than once a week. Probably by next year, this time, we'll be doing the show two or three times a week. And, you know, and Frank doesn't have to come over. He can do it on the phone. And because there's so much to discuss. I don't like when things happen during the week, earlier in the week, and everybody's discussed it all week long.
Right.
And we don't get a chance to get to it until Friday. I'd like to be more up to date because usually we have a little bit different perspective on it. And we like to get the jump. But we don't always have that opportunity. So it's a little bit of a disadvantage here, especially on Friday.
Yeah.
But it's always good to get everybody else's a different perspective on it. And we have the right perspective. No pun intended there, folks. So we do have a couple of lines open for anybody who wants to get a last-minute call in there at 1-718-761-9996. 1-718-761-9996 for anything that's on your mind. And really, there's only been one subject this week, but eventually it's going to die out. And this boost, this phony boost that Obama has gotten with this, an undeserved boost. People are so naive. I mean, how in this day and age, with all the information we have out there, you just make a decision based on what what's laying on the top of the pile. You don't look below the pile. You get all your news from a 30-second bias soundbite. The Obama regime thought they were going to get away with taking the credit for killing Osama bin Laden, but there's too many ways for people to express too many opinions today. There's more than ABC, CBS, and NBC. There's Fox News. There's talk radio. There's the Internet, which is the biggest counterpoint to liberal madness. And liberal madness is truly a disease because they still think that they can put it over on you. That's how ignorant and arrogant these people are, that they thought they were going to get away with giving Obama credit for this. The man who wanted to decimate the military, the man who belongs to the party that decimated our military twice in the last 30 years under Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton and had to be rebuilt by Republican presidents who had to spend money, and then the Democrats condemn for a month. It was like when Ronald Reagan had to rebuild the military after Jimmy Carter. Then they blame him for deficits. You know, we got something out of that money that was spent. We got the defeat of the Soviet Union. That was money well spent. And what we did, we have not gotten anything out of the money that's been spent for social programs except people who are dependent on government and more of your money. And that's the difference. You know, the American people don't mind spending money, I don't think. But, you know, as long as we don't go into bankruptcy, as long as we get some result for it. And that's the difference. People saw that we have not gotten any results from all the spending by Obama, except a cash cow for big labor unions and people who support Obama. That's what it turned out on. By the way, you know those subsidies? Obama now, they want to tax the oil companies because they're making a profit with these high oil prices. But, of course, the Obama regime never talks about the money that oil companies lose if they don't strike oil. And they have I'm sure they have a pretty fat salary bill that they have to lay out, and they do a great service for this country. What would we be without oil, as we've seen? But that doesn't count. The only thing that the left looks at, they don't look at all the hard work and hours that you put in, the research, the scientific know-how, the skill that goes into all of this, the hardships, being out there on those oil rigs away from your family. Very hard job. They don't look at that, no. Just if you make money and you're rewarded for all of that hard work, that's the only thing they look at, and that's supposed to belong to them. Despicable. There was a former Democrat congressman who was chastising Obama for wanting to take the subsidy away from oil companies. That's gonna really end up in bringing more oil out of the ground or out of the sea and lower gas prices. Just tax them some more so they can pass it on to the already overburdened motorist and anyone who eats. You see the prices at the supermarket lately with this creeping inflation? Because former Democrats said that Obama's lying about the oil subsidies, that it was actually eliminated. So any opportunity the Democrats can use and the liberals to grab more money, even if they have to lie about it. And here's what the former Democrat said.
I'm a supporter of the president. I'm concerned that he's going to lose credibility on this oil and gas issue because he's not telling the truth entirely. What he is saying is that you need to eliminate $4 billion worth of tax breaks for major oil companies because major oil companies have obscene profits. The problem with this is that one of the big tax breaks that he's citing, intangible dealing costs, percentage depletion, was repealed by Congress in 1975, 36 years ago, as it affects major oil companies. The only ones that get percentage depletion anymore are in domestic independents who drill most of the wells in the United States and employ 4 million people. Now, the press doesn't do a very good job of covering oil and gas tax issues. They don't understand them. But if the press ever picks up that the president is not telling the truth about the depletion allowance, that it doesn't go to the major oil companies, he's going to have some additional problems, I believe, in the polls.
Yeah. Well, there you go. But should we be surprised, folks? What hasn't this president lied about? When, how you go around the country talking about how you care about the everyday labor, and people get up at 5, 4 o'clock in the morning to go to work, they reach into their pockets, and they're pulling out more and more of their hard-earned money to pay for a cup of coffee, for a bagel in the morning. When they go to the supermarket, when they come home at night, they're paying outrageous prices at the supermarket. They're paying more and more taxes, gasoline, clothes, everything they buy. And that's not good enough for you. They want to eliminate the Bush tax cut so that you can pay $14 a week more in taxes. That's what it would amount to for the average worker. $14 more a week. And they're determined to get rid of those Bush tax cuts because Obama still hasn't gotten over the fact that he lost the battle on the Bush tax cuts. So they're going to find every way they can to make up that difference of money that they think belongs to them and should be coming in back into the Treasury right now. And so that's why this man does nothing but, and his devils in his party, the Devilcrats, constantly. They sit in these smoke-filled rooms thinking of ways to steal more and more of your money. The idiotic legislation they're thinking of passing now to put a device in your automobile to track how far you're driving. I don't think that will ever get anywhere because there would be such an outrage, such an outcry that he would have to back off. I don't think the Congress would allow that, and I don't think they can get enough senators to pass that now. What we've got to do is stall that legislation from even coming to the floor until the election next year. Maybe we can win back the Senate and the presidency. And if we don't actually win back the Senate, maybe we can win a couple of more seats and make it more difficult to pass it. But I don't think that's something that will ever pass because it would just be such an outcry. This is a direct assault on people's freedom. You know, one of the last things that we have in this country where we can really say we're free and get away from it all. Just walk out of your house, hop in your car, and drive. People value their freedom and their automobile. Their automobile is a big thing in people's lives. It is a vehicle. It's something that they can sit in and just be by themselves for a while, listen to the radio, think deeply. And That is something that people really, really value. You see how people get outraged at gasoline prices and how lost they are without their vehicles when they have to bring it into the shop and they don't have a car. And now suddenly, for the first time in 10 years, they have to get back on buses and take a bus to work. I mean, it's depressing. It is. It's a psychological thing. It's like losing your horse in the Old West. So we've got to prevent that and contact your congressman, your senator, call the White House, 1-202-456-1111, 1-202-456-1111. Let the president and this vile Joe Biden know you're not going to stand for this. The automobile, the last bastion of freedom left in this country, and they want to even go after that. Anytime a liberal finds out that you're enjoying something, that's the worst thing you can do. It even comes down to movies. Don't let a liberal know that you enjoy a gory movie. They'll think that you're going to go out and murder somebody. They're the ones that have these scenes cut out of movies. Oh, the American people, their psyche can't handle it. If you see a head chopped off or whatever, somebody shot in the head. You know, they cut all these scenes out of the movies. That started with the liberals. They want to control everything. What you eat, and now how much you eat, how far you drive, how you speak, what kind of clothes you wear. And they'll do it one way or the other. You know, they'll tax you to death to prevent you. If they can't directly, you know, oppose you, they'll tax you into trying doing it. That's why they're not unhappy about these gas prices. This is exactly what they want, because you've heard the stories of people driving less. And this is even in the summertime. Now, what's that going to do? That's going to prevent people from getting in their car and driving farther to places. And all those places that normally rely on summer traffic to visit their state or their city and spend money, those cities are going to be hurting because people are going to stay home. This is what Arnold Schwarzenegger even said about taxes, but until he lost his mind.
From the time they get up in the morning and flush the toilet, they're taxed. And this goes on all day long. Tax, 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 tax.
Yeah, too bad he didn't listen to his own propaganda. He became a liberal out there and fell right into the clutches of the left and the Democrats to give a go along to get along. And he was a real terrible disappointment. He used to say some things that were made sense, and then he became the ultimate politician. So now he wants to go back to making movies, and that's what he should have done. Of course, I'm glad he ran against Gray Davis, because Gray Davis was the worst. But toward the end of his governorship, he wasn't that far away from Gray Davis. So, but nobody could have been as bad as Gray Davis. He was, this guy was so far to the left, his right arm didn't work, but if they had the recall, that was beautiful when they had the recall. But Arnold was a disappointment, and it's really a shame, because at first I liked him, and then he blew it. I thought he would not become just another Democrat politician out there, but the Democrat Party is so dominant that it's really hard not to fall into the trap. And maybe he should have just had one term and left and said, I'm not going to let myself be corrupted. But unfortunately, he did. Not corrupted as far as stealing or anything, but it corrupted as far as not sticking to his guns. Mr. Tough Guy. So, yeah, Mr. Bodybuilder. But Chris Christie in New Jersey is a lot tougher than he is, and he's way overweight. So having, you know, being called the governator, having all those muscles didn't help him out as far as the way his mind worked. Anyway, folks, let's remind you how angry we are about what's going on in this country. And we like to do that at the end of the show. John from Connecticut came up with this idea. And we're going to play. We're not going to take it anymore. We're going to go out with that. And it's the perfect song to end The Right Perspective with. Because I think all of you out there are as mad as we are. And we couldn't wait for the 2000 elections, and it paid off. The first big step. Now I can't wait for the 2012 elections so we can finally dump this horrible Democrats and presidency before they do any more damage. We've got to keep throwing landmines in front of them up until November of 2012. Just keep putting that barbed wire out, digging those ditches, you know, putting those defenses up like the Germans tried to do on the beaches of Normandy to keep the landing force from getting hold. No, that's what we're going to have to do with these Democrats and this just despicable individual we have for a president, this heartless, cold, phony, and propagandist. Now here we go. right, that's the great Dee Snider. Every now and then you see him on Fox and Friends. I don't know what he's doing, but he's still around. I guess they play the circuit or something, you know. But that's the only song I ever heard by them. But, you know, there's no more Twisted Sisters in that movie about the Japanese cars. I forget the name of the movie. Somebody out there will know. Very funny stuff. But he got a lot of fame out of it. Now, I guess he's got a few million. Why not? All you need is one big hit, folks, and your career is made. All right. Spread the word about The Right Perspective. Tune in next. Just shutting down one of the computers here. That's what you hear in the background there. So I always... work on the computers to keep them up to date and fast. I like a fast computer. They say you're only supposed to defrag your computer once a month or something. I do it once a week. Do everything once a week. Clean up the old files and all that. Keep it efficient because we need an efficient setup here to do the show and have everything come up fast for you. So I don't mind doing it once a week. In fact, I enjoy it. And enjoy hearing from you. And reading your instant messages and your email and your input to the show and your participation. Really appreciate it. On behalf of Frank of Queens, we'll see you next week and stay safe.